throw your money. You know, I speak for the fans in a lot of ways. I know how they feel. They're great. They're loyal. They want a bang for their buck.
We know how you feel because we feel the same way too. This is Sportsnet 650, home of the Canucks. My name is Dr. Tej Dhaliwal, and I'm joined by Sat Oberoi, Nav Desange, and Ryan Cattermole. We are the LarshCast.
Hold up. Hold up. Hold up. Hope you're ready for the next episode. Hey.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the LarshCast on Sportsnet on this rare for the rest of the season, post-game and also pre-game for the rubber match in the back-to-back against Montreal. The Canucks with a eventful, if not interesting, overtime win last night and a potential goal of the year candidate from JT Miller. We've got an absolutely action-packed show here today. We've got Elijah from Stick and Rink podcast joining us at 9:30 for our Into the Podverse guests. We've got Joey Kenward coming up at 10. Is This Anything at 11? And we've got Ian McIntyre joining us at 11:30 today. So it's going to be an absolutely action-packed Canucks-filled show. But, you know, it was an eventful one last night. It tugged on the emotions a little bit. And I just want to see everybody's feeling. So, Tej, what are your thoughts on the game last night? I know you're, like everybody else in this market, a little bit irate about the reffing so far. How do you feel about the Canucks?
I'm still trying to hunt those two patients down. I think they missed their exams yesterday. So
holy.
This guy.
That was atrocious.
Yeah.
You know, the display of reffing, everybody kind of has this inkling that they want a Leafs versus Habs first round series, right? You know, is that the reason they're doing this? Because it makes no other sense for the reffing to be this egregious. I mean, in overtime, with the game on the line and the most obvious pick, you know damn well if that was the Leafs or the Habs, that's being called 10 times out of 10. And yep. I know we're going to get into it a little bit more, but I have a lot more to say about the refs. And that's just the most frustrating part about a good game the Canucks played. Like, the Canucks played a great game for the most part. You know, they had a few lapses and
most complete game of the year.
Exactly. And then, you know, Jake Virtanen had a really good game until that last moment where he lost his sense. And I'm kind of glad for Jake's sake that Nav's not here today, because I think, Nav, his wife is due soon here. Their second kid coming up. But if Nav was here, I think Jake Virtanen might be on his mind there. But Sat, what did you think about the game?
You know what? So I didn't get a chance to watch the whole game, but I did catch some clips. And on Jake Virtanen there, Andrew Walker had a great tweet the other day, and he said, I'll paraphrase, that Jake Virtanen has the awareness of a carrot, right? So, I mean, I think that sums it up completely well. It's... You just have to shake your head, because you don't know. You know, you can be having a great game and then you have this one mind lapse, and like, you know, is it lack of focus? Is it not knowing what's going on? Like, what's going on, right? So
yeah.
Some players are just like that. They're going to frustrate you, and you know, you just hope that they have more times where they don't frustrate you than more times than they do frustrate you.
But it is a nice evolution, though, isn't it? Like, just to see him move away. Like, if that's the knock, like, if he's going to have that one time every couple of games that he loses his temper and goes after somebody, as opposed to not knowing what player you're going to get on a game-to-game basis, I think most fans would take that. Don't you think, Sat?
Just consistency, though, right? That's what you want to see. You want to see him play the same way game in, game out. You know, 70 out of 82 games. You can't have it 40 games out of 82, right? You just want this. You want to... expectation that's going to kind of match with reality. Otherwise, you're always going to have these arguments as, you know, do the Canucks need this player, or should they trade this player? Is he a 20 goal scorer? Is he a 3 goal scorer? Right? Like,
if Jake there has keeps to be some playing the way he's playing right now, though, I mean, since the streak started, and I know Joey Pitt here we want to hear his thoughts on the game too, but sorry, Joey.
This always happens to me.
Jake Virtanen is such a hot button topic always, but he has been playing better. And you notice things in his defensive game that have improved. You know, he's more reliable defensively. And I know that's a strange thing to say. I mean, just coming out of my mouth, that didn't seem right. But Jake Virtanen has been more reliable defensively in the last, you know, say 10 games or so. And it is a sign of improvement and a sign of a player that's trying to do the things that Travis Green wants him to do and to implement in terms of his defensive structure and the team structure. But you have to have awareness at the end of games that are so tight and the playoff race is so tight, and you need those points in regulation against this team, that especially the Habs, that, you know, that Jake Virtanen knows going into this game how important the game was, and for him to see Tyler Toffoli and lose his marbles just because of it was his former teammate, or there was a, I don't know what it was, maybe they were chirping back and forth, but you have to think maybe part of it is that, you know, the whole preseason you know, dilemma, or like Toffoli is gone and Virtanen has to jump into the top six. He's no Toffoli. Maybe that got to his head. I don't know, but that just cannot happen.
It's very reminiscent of the Miller penalty from earlier in the year, where it's like, as a fan, you're like, oh, that, you know, I'd love to see him go after Toffoli like that. But, oh, timing and execution and situation. But I got to ask Joey, because we're trying to get some comments from you here. What are your thoughts on, because to me, I get the sense that now there are two JVs on this team. And Jimmy Vesey is the other one that kind of can fill similar roles, that both have a knock against them, have maybe not been the player that's expected of them. Do you think there's anything to having Vesey come on that's maybe spurred Virtanen to be a little bit more engaged in the lineup?
Well, I'm a firm follower of Steve Dangle. I think he makes great YouTube videos. And one of the things that has been a constant during this season of LFR was the Be Nice to Jimmy campaign. Jimmy Vesey was really good for the Toronto Maple Leafs. He picked up points where he needed to, and he filled the hole that they needed, right?
Yeah.
Then the Canucks pick him up on waivers. So I think that we, as the one of the main podcasts here in the Vancouver market, as well as a radio program right here on Sportsnet 650, should pick up the moniker of Be Nice to Jimmy. Jimmy Vesey could be that perfect guy to bounce between the second and third line and just fill roles. He can be a shutdown guy, or he can chip in on the offense and throw a couple hits. He's a perfect player for this team right now. And at the cap hit that we're paying him, dude, come on. This was a perfect pickup on waivers by Jimbo.
I like the fact that he's good buddies with JT Miller. And I don't know if that factored into how well JT Miller played last night, but
I think it has to.
It has to have an impact. You know, chemistry has that impact. Naturally, playing with people that you know, have a good rapport with, good chemistry with, and have played with in the past and have played successfully with, you know, that's going to bode well for this team. And I hope to see more of that Jimmy Vesey and JT Miller duo going forward. I don't know if it's going to be JV squared the whole time, but you know, when Petey comes back eventually, I think Jake Virtanen gets bumped down a little bit into a position that's more comfortable for him. But yeah, Jimmy Vesey, I liked his debut. I couldn't really see anything wrong with how he played. I like that he is very aware on the ice, defensively, you know, stopping pucks in transition in the neutral zone, even good hand-eye coordination. And down low, he's making smart plays and he's, you know, protecting the puck well. Is Jimmy Vesey the JV that we thought we had in JV? Like, I got to ask.
You know what?
I love it.
I'll say this. Like, Jimmy Vesey is, like we talked, it's a great, great addition because it's low risk. It's low cost. Nobody can hate this move. If it doesn't work, you walk away. No big deal. But don't you guys just get the sense that, like, typical Canucks luck and Canucks fashion, it's going to go one of two ways. Jimmy Vesey is going to go on a tear and get like 7 goals in 5 games, or he's going to go goalless in like 15. He's going to get like 1 goal for the rest of the year, right? It's going to go one of two ways. He's not going to be this, you know, up and down middling player, I don't think. It's hit or miss, which is fine, right? Which is fine. But going back to kind of where he fits in the lineup, right now he's plugging holes. Like Tanner Pearson is out for, you know, he may never come back to the Canucks if he does get traded, and he's done. Right, so there's that hole there on the left hand, on the left side of the forward lines there, and then you have injuries with Petey, right? When he comes back, is Miller going to stay center or is he going to go move to the left? And so what do you do? So he's that prototypical middle six player that, you know, all teams need. When there's injuries, you can step in, maybe chip in a goal or a couple of points here and there. But when your team's healthy, I think he could be a really good third line player.
Yeah.
But I don't think he can play on the fourth line. Like,
no.
He does not belong on the fourth line. He has to be in that third or second line to be effective.
I agree.
Yeah, I totally. You're 100% right. He needs to be in that kind of. He still needs to be in a slightly offensively minded sort of a role to be successful. Once again, you're listening to the LarshCast on Sportsnet 650. Ryan here with Sat, TJ, and Joey. We've also got producer Joel Gaudette working the switchboard for us as well today.
The hero, Joel Gaudette.
The hero. Well, I heard he's the producer god. Somebody told me that.
And, radio god.
Producer god.
That's so radio can we just, god. Yeah.
Radio God, sorry.
Radio God, that's right. Radio God.
I'm too...
You talked about a hero. Okay, so this is a sidebar. I watched the Zack Snyder version of Justice League last night.
It's 4 hours long. Is it good? Tell me.
It is epic from the start to the end. Like, it is... Like, I can't even remember what the first one or the original or whatever you
so
want to call
it was.
So bad.
It's so bad.
I don't remember the plot, but this one is great.
My brother watched that movie twice yesterday. A four-hour movie twice. That's how good it was. So I can't wait to watch it.
The only thing I know is that I can't remember the main villain's name, but that suit he's wearing looks super uncomfortable to wear.
Yeah, like it's...
Okay, but where are you going with the Justice League reference, Zach? Come on.
No, you said talk about heroes, right? Talking about heroes.
Oh, I see. He just wanted to talk about the movie. There was no segue happening.
Well, Ryan, tee up the poll question because it's a pretty good one for this week.
So our poll question for this week, and you know, this is one that I think we really want you guys to engage with us on Twitter. I feel like there's going to be some Is This Anything? By the way, to mention, we're going to do Is This Anything in the 11 o'clock hour. We've already had one from TJ about the refs trying to make this Montreal-Toronto matchup happen. We just had one from Sat. I feel like it's going to be a big one. So send those submissions in. Engage with us on the poll question here. But today's poll question, pretty simple. On the 25th anniversary of the Naslin for Stoyanov trade, what's the greatest trade acquisition in Canucks history? We've got four options for you as always. Marcus Naslin, as mentioned. JT Miller, Roberto Luongo, or Todd Bertuzzi. And Joey, what are your thoughts on this first? Do you have I'm assuming if I know you, you're going to say Luongo, but what are your thoughts and tell me why?
I'm going off the board.
Oh.
I'm going off the board. 1987, Pat Quinn takes over as GM of this hockey team. First thing he does is trade Patrick Sundstrom to the New Jersey Devils in exchange for Greg Adams and a young goaltender named Kirk McLean. Honestly, if you look at... we have those rose-tinted glasses for those 90s Canuck teams, right? And when you really look at how Quinn built that team, the first step was acquiring Kirk McLean. And then from there, they draft Linden and Bure. Adams also rises to prominence. They pick up Court, Nolan Ronning. And they go from there, right? But the key building block was Captain Kirk.
That's a pretty good... I think he has a point there. I mean, we could have included that. I'm sure we'll hear some write-in votes for that too. But that is definitely a good point, Joey. And to that point about building a team from the net out, I think the Canucks, you know, the team that we have here, they're kind of mimicking that. Having Thatcher Demko and going forward from him, because what can you say about Thatcher Demko at this point that hasn't already been said? I mean,
well, I got
nobody.
One.
Nobody expected him to be better than Bubble Demko. I mean, is that even possible?
It's crazy.
What are we seeing here? Vezina campaign for a young goalie, the first year that he becomes a starter in the National Hockey League, and coming off of a historic performance in the NHL playoff bubble. You know, a once in a lifetime experience. I mean, it might happen again this year, but just to see him and the mental fortitude and just, you know, his compete levels and how he's driving the bus here. I mean, JT Miller, you can say all you want about him driving the offense and carrying the team, you know, into the playoffs again like he did last year. That might happen, but Thatcher Demko, none of that happens without his high, you know, level of play and just phenomenal. You know, just every time you watch him on the ice making routine saves, you know, it's just like tough saves look easy for him, you know. Tyler Toffoli on that breakaway, I think I saw Satir Shot tweet about it. That was the one time you actually had confidence that Demko was going to stop Toffoli. Yep. Early on this season, when you saw Toffoli coming down on the breakaway, you're like, okay, it's going in the back of the net, you know. So what a turnaround that he has done for this team.
I think the best way, I sent out a tweet after one of the victories and during this streak where Thatcher Demko is everything I remember Roberto Luongo being, and then some. Like, you know how rose-tinted glasses and nostalgia take their effect when you remember back to good times like your childhood and that great Luongo play, right? But there's also that other side of the back of your mind. It's like, yeah, but he'd go swim and he'd end up on his belly and they'd get scored on, or he'd crap his pants in overtime, or you just have these weird memories of Luongo, right? Letting in five against Phoenix. What's going on? But with Demko, you don't. I don't have that. It's exactly how I want to remember Luongo, but yep. better.
He's so much better in the shootout, too. Like you nailed it, Joey. Like the one thing you could guarantee with Luongo every time we had a shootout, like the man was a fantastic goaltender, but pretty much unequivocally, any time if anybody was coming down with speed, Luongo was ending up on the crest of his jersey, stomach down. Guaranteed. Every yeah. time. Doing some sort of desperation save. And while that's fun to watch, and when he would make a few of them, like, it's an absolute gorgeous thing. You have to think about, like, what Demko is doing is a much more conservative way of doing it, I would mm-hmm. argue, than Luongo is. Like, he's much more calm. He's playing the angles well. You know, whereas Luongo was like, obviously not in the same realm, but in that half sort of style of
that street
scrambly, more scrambly, more athletic. That's exactly it, Sat. It, you know, he kind of, they're very similar in what they're doing for the team, but Demko's doing it in such a more confidence-inducing way just because he's so calm and he just looks unflappable back there.
Yeah, it's absolutely like it's something, it's a treat to watch.
Yeah.
But at the end, it's a double-edged sword though, right? The Canucks, you know, they've been 8-2 in the last 10 in March. They've had the most points in the North Division, which is great.
And only outshot an opponent once in March.
Exactly,
so far.
Right?
And been obliterated in the shot count.
That's the scary part.
Yeah, but early on this year, they were outshooting the opposition too and losing. You know, we call those moral victories, right?
That's
so
true.
You know, I don't like that the whole, you know, I'm going to get into that a little bit later, I think, but I don't like that whole, the inability, the hypocrisy where you know, on one hand, you call it a moral victory, and you can't, you know, it's unacceptable. And then on the other hand, you know, because a goalie stands on his head a couple games, now it's unacceptable that way, too. Like, it's just the double standards.
No, it's,
really
that's not though, TJ. It's not that. It's that, you know, the Canucks were relying on one player to win the game. It's the same thing as if the Canucks only had, you know, JT Miller scoring every goal for the team.
It's not that it's unacceptable. It's that it's unsustainable. To me, it's exceptional. Exactly. Like, what Demko's done is an absolute gift. He's given this market and breathed new life into this fan base, into this team, and given us a conversation about continuing to work towards the playoffs. I think the argument is that it's not sustainable. We can't continue to rely on Demko like this for a long period of time. Tonight is huge.
The point we're making... Before you do that,
because we got Holtby starting in net tonight as well, too, guys. This is a huge game for Holtby's career, do we not think? Like, if he lays an egg out there tonight with the importance of this game, with the way this team's been trending, with the way Demko has been bailing everybody out, like, I got to imagine that he's feeling more pressure than anybody.
So this is what I wanted to say about, you guys are talking about Demko is the reason we're winning. Yes, he is a big reason we're winning, but that takes a lot. If you call it, like, if you just say it's just Demko, it takes a lot of credit away from a lot of other players and the coaching staff for this turnaround that's happened here. And I do want to, like, you have to give some love to Travis Green. You have to. And I've noticed with Travis Green on this streak, is his ability to make adjustments to the opposition. And you go back to the Leaf series, the two-game series that we had here, you notice a change in the forecheck. You know, he was weakening the pressure and stacking the neutral zone, almost similar to the Jacques Lemaire trap against the Leafs. And it prevented them from generating chances off the rush, which they excel at. And then against the Habs, you know, the first time they came in with their new coaching staff, it was a different team than the first team that came here early on in the season with, you know, Claude Julien. So he couldn't, I guess, make adjustments. And the Habs, maybe they were playing better at that time. With a new coach, new power play, they had a hot start. We still got one, you know, win off of them with the Adam Gaudette late tying goal there. But this recent series against the Habs, I noticed another difference in the dump and chase strategy, which garnered them an abundance of opportunities to retrieve the puck. Instead of the classic ring around or side, you know, same side dump, they were firing cross ice dumps, which allowed the forechecker, you know, with the knowledge of what was happening, an extra step on that side and got a jump on the defender. And it allowed the Canucks to retrieve pucks more efficiently. So, yes, Thatcher Demko is playing, you know, lights out. He's playing out of his mind. But we can't just say it's just Thatcher Demko. We have to give credit where credit is due. And I think this coaching staff and Travis Green and Nolan Baumgartner, you know, I've been hard on him early on this year. But I believe they deserve their fair share of credit as well for this turnaround.
Okay, so I'll ask it this way. In the last three games, the Canucks have 3 wins, all after 60 minutes of play. Mm-hmm. If Demko gives up 2 more goals in the last 3 games, right? And I don't know how many shots he faced, probably about 110 shots, right? In 110 shots, if he gives up two more goals, the Canucks lose 2 of 3.
Yeah.
Right? So that you can say whatever you want about all those other areas, but the fact of the matter is the Canucks are relying on Demko to win them games, which, again, okay, is fine. He wears the jersey with the Canucks logo on it. He's allowed to win games.
But at the same time,
back to sustainability.
But this goes back to what I was saying in February when they were all these moral victories where they were outplaying the opposition. You can say the same thing. If we scored one or two more goals, if PD didn't hit that post every game, you know, like we would have won those games too. And that was when we had, you know, subpar goaltending. Do you understand?
That's not
the hypocrisy?
But here, those games.
I think you're both right. And like, let's call a spade a spade, guys. There are 12 forwards and there are 6 defensemen on the ice that obviously are contributing to the game. But I think the argument here is whether or not this can be sustainable if some other players don't step up. Yeah, they're scoring a few more goals. They're being a bit more defensively sound. But Demko's been the savior for this team. And like, TJ, you're absolutely right. We talked about those moral victories, but why were there moral victories? Because the team was playing well, and that's they were playing a style of game that we had been asking them to try and play. So there was, you know, like, say what you want about not winning the game and the term moral victories, but at least the team was executing theoretically in the way we want to see them. The issue now is that we're winning games, which is great, and we're back in the playoff conversation, but the games we're winning are coming at a high cost to our goaltender in terms of energy output and all that sort of thing. And it's not the way this team needs to play to be successful long term. That's kind of my putting in parentheses the whole situation here. But you're not wrong. Like, I mean, there are players on this team that are playing well. Like, Schmidt's played better. Hughes is finally starting to shore up his defensive game. But there are still a lot of things, specifically defensively, that this team needs to work on to give Demko some help moving forward here. That's my take on it.
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. And the goalies are allowed to win you games. It's just
you
need other areas to creep up and support that, you know, the goaltender. So you don't, in case Demko has a stinker, or in case where, you know, the Canucks are playing Holtby and Net today, if they play the same style of game, they're not going to win, right? That's simple as that. And they need Holtby to play tonight because Demko just can't play the next 22 games. It's just not,
well,
it's not going to be.
You're saying if the Canucks play the way they played last night, they're not going to win this game with Holtby and Net? Is that what you're saying? Because I think the way the Canucks played last night...
Would you trust Holtby to make that save?
Last night's probably the exception, because they didn't play a really complete game last night.
If last night's not the exception, I think last night is an example of Travis Green implementing a system that counters the opposition. And I do believe that he has figured out this Habs team a little bit. And I mean, I'm eager to see their response to an overtime loss. But, you know, we have to give some love to the coaching staff and the players in that locker room, but I can't say this enough. This turnaround doesn't happen without that entire coaching staff sending the right message in that locker room and getting the players to dig deep when they were facing the biggest uphill battle. You know, it was a 5% chance of making the playoffs at some point, even less.
Yeah.
You know, that could be, you know, that could be really tough on some players, and you might see some otherwise players getting dejected or just losing interest, but not this team. And for all that hoopla about this team having taken a step back, I mean, I think it's quite clear to me, it has been clear this year, that they were just playing, underperforming early on, and they were much better than was being led on. And now we're seeing that, you know, come to fruition here, that this team is actually a pretty good team. They just had a really tough go of it early on. And so I'm excited to see the second half. You know, Pettersson's going to come back eventually. We got a bye week coming up, so there's some time. We got a few more games before we get there. And let me just tell you, everybody, Vasily Podkolzin is knocking on that door.
There it
is. If his team gets eliminated, 2-week quarantines, ELC signed, Vasily Podkolzin is coming to town. So keep that in mind, everybody. You're listening to the Larchcast on your Saturday morning here on Home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
In a drought, no flow, rain wasn't pouring down. See, that pain was all around. See, my mode was kinda lounge. Didn't know which way to turn. Flow was cool, but I still felt burned. Energy up, you can feel my surge. I'ma kill everything like this purge.
Let's just get this is Sportsnet Today with the Larchcast. Now hear your boys on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
All right, welcome back to the Larchcast here on Sportsnet 650, home of the Vancouver Canucks, and we are previewing the Canucks and the Canadiens. Game 2 of this mini set going today at 4 p.m. Pacific. So make sure you do not miss that. It's a 4 p.m. game on Saturday. It is in the East Coast.
You know what? I did miss that. Listening to that song. You got to let it play a little bit coming out of the break, Zach. Come on. I was jamming there.
Hey, man. We're a radio. We're talk radio. We talk.
That's it. Teach yeah. wants to be listening to QMFM over here.
There it is. Man. There it is. So we
it's
do
the only
have
music we get in the morning on Saturday morning, you know, coming out of commercial breaks.
Fair enough.
What's wrong with
we do have Elijah coming up here for Into the Podverse from Stick and Rink Pod in a few moments. Before we do get to you, Rye, to do the read there, I want to get into the Dunbar Lumber text line 650-650 if you do want to share your thoughts. And there's a lot of action in this inbox right now, so I'm gonna start on a couple. There's a couple I can't read.
Jay in East Van just sent in an essay.
I just saw that. That thing is a monster.
It's about how I'm right, right?
I mean, we're gonna read it like ourselves, Jay. But there's no way we have time to read that on air. Come on. I mean, it's a great text.
I'm gonna make a hot tea and read that in bed.
That's gotta be one of those texting from the laptop. That's an actual essay. It's good, grammatically perfect. There's, you know, even using all these apostrophes and
colons. Yeah, colons.
That,
yeah,
that's definitely
thing.
Not a text. Is it off your phone, Jay? Send us another text if that's off your phone. How much time did you spend sending that essay in? But anyways,
yeah,
go
so
ahead.
We have this one. Yeah, we have this one. We got early on in the show from Bill from Burnaby here, and it goes back to the reffing discussion that you know TJ you're talking about, and. And then so the text is, Montreal's been screwed by reffing all year, so stop whining on behalf of the Canucks, TJ. What do you have to say about that before we get Elijah on?
You want me to say the reffing spiel now? I had something saved up here, but okay.
Okay, let's save it then. Save it. Just
give, okay,
give
I'll save
it.
But I think that texter is out to lunch.
We're going
to
get Montreal into it on is this anything at 11 anyways. So.
Yeah, I'm going to rip the refs a little bit harder.
Yeah, is this anything is where we're going to start tackling the refs here. But with that, guys, it's time for our Into the Podverse segment. This is something that we do every week to try and shine a local spotlight on the many, many talented podcasts that we have in the local Vancouver market. We're lucky that we have an incredible engaged fan base and a ton of people joining us, and today's guest is Elijah of Stick and Rink Podcast. He's going to be joining us to discuss all things Canucks. As always, he's brought to us with all of our guests by HBD Homes. They're a design build new home builder with over 20 years of experience. They specialize in new home construction, laneway homes, and renovations. You can visit their website at hbdhomes.ca, their Instagram page at hbd_homes, or call them directly at 778-968-1491. And with that, we welcome to the show Elijah. How you doing this morning?
Boys, how we doing? I'm doing great. I'm not the biggest morning guy when it comes to Saturdays, so that just means that's just how big you guys are. You got me out of bed and ready to go by 9:30. Not an achievement for most people, but it's Saturday, guys. I'm up. I'm proud of myself. I'm happy to do this. Too. I'm excited.
I love it. None of us would be. I don't think many of us would be awake if it wasn't for the show, for sure. Like, I'd still be at the very least lying in bed, kind of perusing The Athletic or something on my phone.
Elijah is basically saying he looks like his profile picture right now. Is that what you're saying, Elijah?
Whoa. Boys, there's a reason that profile picture cuts off at the neck. Let's just say that. And that was posted.
We guessed that you were at Wreck Beach. Is that a fair to say? Good guess.
That's probably where I wanted to be. I was not at the moment, but that's probably where I wanted to be at that time. Okay. I would have fit in a bit more, that's for sure.
Yeah, so, for those that don't know what we're talking about, make sure you look at Twitter there. You'll see right away.
Yeah, it's the classic.
That profile picture's kind of got like a little Blue Steel vibes to it, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
maybe Magnum. Maybe Magnum.
Yeah, totally.
Right?
So, Elijah, tell us a little bit about how you feel about this team and last night's Canucks victory and going forward this season. Where are you at on the believometer?
All right.
You know, how passionate are you about?
I feel like I thrive in adversity. So like January and February, that's where I was making my money right there. Like I was positive train. I feel like I was probably one of the only people on there. I think a few of you guys were there with me, and that's fine. I think a lot of fans use logic. I'm not a logic guy. I'm not a stats guy. I'm not a logic guy. So the faith was real back in January. It was tough, but it was real. And so now here we are. I think, what is it now? It's like 8 of 9, something like that. Yeah. I'm not, like I said, not the best stats guy. I'm not going to bring the facts, but my believometer is as high as it's ever been this season, and I'm full on the playoffs. We're not sellers. Let's not be buyers either, but we're full playoff ahead. That's all it is.
Okay, so Elijah, you say you're a very positive guy, and I'm not trying to dampen your hopes a bit here, but the Canucks got 22 games left, and You know, if the preseason pundits were right that the, you know, playoff bar is set at 65, 66 points, that means the Canucks have to go something like 16-6. You think they can do that?
Absolutely. I think I remember the stats were kind of coming out. This was probably 2 weeks ago, and I remember the big number people were throwing out was about like 21-9 or 21-8, and that was kind of before they reeled off this 7-8 streak, and we kind of thought there's no way they can do that. But in reality, when you look at the rest of their schedule, we're going to play Ottawa four times. I think we've kind of turned the corner on Montreal, and really, when you watch any of the last probably 15 games or so, we've been the better team, I'd say, 90% of the time. And the times, like, it's every adversity that we're facing, when the goals are scoring against us, like last night, the opening goal, what a trash penalty call, obviously. And that's just a bit of adversity. We're doing the exact opposite with adversity that we were doing in January right now. So I'm super positive about these 22 games. I think it could be done, and I think it will be done.
Okay.
I love
that's a heck of a prediction here first. So I just want to, we've got some people texting in here, and I just kind of want to reference this and ask you the question. Unsigned text here, make sure to sign your text, folks, into the Sportsnet 650 text message inbox. But they relied on Markstrom last year exactly the same as Demko. And we were discussing earlier in the show just the amount of shots that Demko's seeing and how unsustainable it is. And to me, I think if the Canucks were giving up less shots on Demko, he's probably starting tonight's game based on how hot he's playing. What's your sense of where this team's at? And are they relying on Demko the same way they relied on Markstrom? And is this sustainable?
Yeah, you know, I would say as good as my positivity is, with every team having success, there's holes, right? Like it's not a flawless system. But in addition to that, what I would say is that any team that's ever done anything in the playoffs or done any miraculous run like this, they've relied on something more than they should, right? Like, I think when Ottawa had their huge run, it was the Hamburglar that did it for them. I don't think it's something to criticize when one of your players that, you know, you've drafted and you've kind of touted as being a big cornerstone of your team is playing like a cornerstone of your team, right? Like, if Petey was doing it last year, carrying us through five games, it wasn't so much. There's kind of this stigma around, like, when your goalie wins you games, that's not sustainable. Well, maybe by the time that he stops winning games, maybe we got some forward stepping up a bit more, you know?
Elijah, I got a text here. I think it's your buddy, but he says, Jordan here. Can you ask Elijah when he plans on getting a haircut?
You're just getting ripped for that Twitter pic, eh?
Well, boys, that does not include the hair right now. I've become kind of the long flow quarantine guy. And it's at the point now where I bought a couple headbands and I throw it back like Serena Williams. So I'm just, I have a rule that like I'm not going to cut my hair until I can play sports with the long hair. So that's kind of a tough ask with a schedule. But
get that greasy flow. I love it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so let's get into, you know, Jimmy Vesey and where he fits in this team. What were your thoughts on his game, first of all? And what do you see going forward? What do you hope to see and what do you expect to see out of Jimmy Vesey?
Well, it sounds like watching him in the few games we played against Toronto this year and watching him in his first game as a Canuck, I think I was taken after a lot of what the announcers were saying. He seems like a bit more of a cerebral player, obviously not breakneck speed or anything like that. I think that could be perfect. What it seems like would be the best fit right now with Pedersen's injury and just kind of what's going on with this forward group is obviously like a mishmash of lines. Like we saw Miller playing with him last night. We saw Virtanen at times. I think he'll be perfect for that because every single one of these teammates is new for him. He doesn't have chemistry with any of them. So it could be a perfect situation.
Besides Miller.
Oh yeah.
He has some chemistry with JT Miller, right?
Yeah. Maybe a bit outdated though, don't you think?
Well, who knows how if they trained together in the offseason. They obviously met for dinner this past year, but there's a quarantine.
Okay, so yeah. See, you boys got a bit more information than me, all right? I'm working off just the headlines and what people tell me. You guys go a bit farther with it.
Well, I'm speculating here. I don't know their situation, but they did play
TJ
together.
TJ is an insider, I've heard. Yeah, TJ is an insider.
Add a couple R's to that. Insider.
Insider.
All right, we're talking with Elijah of Stick and Rink Podcast. You're on the Larchcast Sportsnet 650. You're home with the Vancouver Canucks. And Elijah, so what? Let's transition to the game tonight. What do you want to see from the Vancouver Canucks on a back-to-back against the Habs?
Well, I think I just want to see a continuation of the last 15 games, just to see them outwork the team again. did you guys notice last night how there was just a ton of focus on any time the puck wasn't in the Canadian zone? It was all out hustle about getting the puck back, and then it wasn't so fancy after that. Like, it was a lot of dump and chase, and that's not the prettiest style of game, but I think that that's a really easy way to facilitate a game where you can outwork the opponent, because it's just constantly going back for the puck one after another. And yeah, you know what, they'll break the puck out 60% of the time, but the other 40%, you're giving them a hell of a time in their own zone.
Yeah. You know, for me, watching last night, the turning point for me when I knew this team was going to win the game was when itty-bitty Brendan Gallagher tried to step up to JT Miller, and he just stood his ground and just knocked his little candy butt to the ground there. That was the turning point for me. And, you know, JT Miller is the type of player who needs to be engaged early, I think, for him to have a great game. And so for him to have that kind of a moment and then score that overtime, glorious overtime winner, you know, I think his comment after the game was, tonight is going to be the most important game of the season. So I'm expecting another big game out of JT Miller and these Canucks. But Elijah, let me ask you, your thoughts on the coaching staff's job so far this season, and what about Travis Green's ability to make adjustments to the opposition, like you saw, you know, describing the different forecheck there?
Yeah, I think that this is a very demanding fan base. We all know that. I was never on the get rid of Travis Green wagon. I'm not a part of that. I will not subscribe to that. But I've been pleased with it. I haven't been. I think, like anyone else, you kind of get impatient as a fan, and you want to see changes after change, like one after another, even during a game too, when things are going well. He seems like a bit of a patient guy with those things sometimes, but I think even at the point we're at now, you know, he's tinkered with enough things that maybe he hasn't made 20 to 30 changes, but the few that he's made over the past few weeks they've done amazing things, right? Like the defense is shored up for sure. Tyler Myers he's playing out of his mind. Tedge, I know you're a big advocate of Tyler Myers right now. I am as well. Like,
I'm so glad you just mentioned him.
Like, if you're talking pure defensively, he's right up there with Hughes right now.
You know, okay, you got me smiling, Elijah. Thank you. I'm going to go on a little spiel here. Okay, so, like, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I had a lot to say about Tyler Myers. And I know all of you guys listening and here, you know, Ryan and Sat and Nav's probably rolling his eyes. I know you all hate the contract. You hate Tyler Myers' contract. You hate the fact that a human being signed on the dotted line a contract that was put before him. You hate that. But for God's sake, put aside for a moment all of that and just talk about Myers the player. Hey. Myers, the steady presence on the back end. He's been playing some of his best hockey as a Canuck during this recent streak, all the while partnered with Jordy Benn. Now, just to be clear, this isn't a shot at Jordy Benn so much as it is pointing out the obvious on this roster that Jordy Benn is no Edler or Hughes, okay? So Myers, along with everyone else on this team, has an absurdly rough, you know, had an absurdly rough first half of the season. But since Bubble Demko has solidified the crease, we have seen a rejuvenation of sorts. And Elijah knows what I'm talking about. A recertification of sorts, you can call it that. One that, let's be honest, you know, it'll never justify his contract in the eyes of some fans, but may end up, you know, being stomachable in the end. But the bottom line is Tyler Myers does not deserve all the hate that he gets because he signed on the dotted line. That's
Here's
all he
the
did.
Thing. Here's the thing. Okay, and I gotta say, Don has texted us in again. The bickering hens are at it again.
Yep.
My favorite way to start Saturday morning. But here's the thing. Here's the thing, Don. I actually agree with TJ on this point.
He's right.
He is absolutely right. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. Was he that to start the season? No.
No.
Was he worthy of that $6 million price tag up until maybe the last couple weeks? No. But if this is the Tyler Myers that we're going to get for the remainder of his contract, then I'm absolutely thrilled with this play. And I will take that. I'll take that at $6 million if that's what we're getting from him. Absolutely. But I know,
so
Joey.
Ryan,
oh, sorry.
Did you just call him Tire Fire Myers?
I did not. Okay. That was earlier in the year. And guys, I have thrown my shade at Tyler Myers. You know, I've gone at him kind of between him and Jake Virtanen, and probably harder than any other Canucks on this team. So for me to say, I agree, this is hard on two fronts. I'm also admitting I'm wrong, and I'm just boldly agreeing with TJ. So it's, you know, it's challenging.
That's a big man move right there.
But that's exactly it. But I know Joey here has been trying to get a word in edgewise and ask you about our poll question here. So I'm going to just make the clean break and let him get in here.
Well, thank you very much for that, Ryan. TJ has this problem where he goes into business for himself. I just want to touch up on
I just that was a touch, chirp.
Oh, chirp and a half there, boys. Elijah, I just want to get your thoughts on the poll question that we got going right now. It's the 25th anniversary of the Naslin trade here. So I just want to know what you think is the best trade in Canucks history. The four choices we have on the board are Naslin, JT Miller, Todd Bertuzzi, and Roberto Luongo. Is it one of those four for you, or is it something off the board?
I think I'll just be a plain Jane, and I'll go with the Luongo one. I think bringing over the player, the personality is one thing, but just like all the kind of history that came for the next whatever it was, like 6-7 years,
that's
like
it.
That will never be replaced in my life. But that was kind of my first. I was pretty young for the Bertuzzi Naslin era, so that stuck with me in my young years. But in terms of like actually understanding the game and the magnitude of what was going on, the Luongo era really is what I call it was just crazy, and that'll never go anywhere in my mind.
So yeah. I voted for the Bertuzzi trade just because the Bertuzzi trade brought Luongo.
I was going to ask about that, actually.
It's funny. Okay.
Yeah, sorry. That's kind of what I meant.
That's playing 4D chess.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Right here, right? Yeah, and I think that trade line just died recently, right?
So, and you could even go even further and say Todd Bertuzzi was the inspiration for what JT Miller wanted to emulate in his career. So
That's a stretch, yeah, for sure. But, you know, it's interesting because, you mentioned the value of the position as well, too. And I think, I don't know what your guys' thoughts are, but my second place, my next highest choice would be the Naslin trade, just because the value of what we got for what we traded away was astronomical to get that franchise player, our number one goal scorer. But you look at Luongo, the intangibles, the fact, what, like, all the way down to Bo Horvat, I'm pretty sure we've traced him, and there's a few steps back or further past that if you really get deep on that trade. So what we got back for Luongo long term, and how that paid dividends for this roster now, let alone the fact that he was also a franchise player. They made him the captain as a goaltender, and he came into quote unquote a goalie graveyard and absolutely demolished that moniker from us as well too. Those factors, I think, have to be, you consider the whole thing, it's hands down. But I don't know, like, Sat, what's your thought on that? What's your take on that?
Yeah, you know what? Like, the whole goalie graveyard thing, it's Vancouver. It is. Mm-hmm. Even Luongo is part of it. The way he exited, the way that having Luongo made Schneider expendable. And, I mean, that was a great trade because Schneider went on to do absolutely nothing. But, and then the way Luongo had to leave, and it's just all this drama around goalies. So it may not be a goalie graveyard, but now it's like a goalie epic, right? It's just never ending. That's
goalie drama.
So
it's a goalie graveyard. Side note, check out my YouTube video on the goalie graveyard. Anyway,
that's a good one.
Here's a text. What about the Burke deal to get both Sedins? We excluded that because there were a lot of different trades and moving parts in that scenario. And so, I mean, to be honest, that whole series of trades might be the greatest.
That's the Bertuzzi trade too, though. Because we got McCabe, the Canucks got McCabe in that deal, and they traded McCabe to get a Sedin, right? So that's all part of the same line.
Yeah, you know what? They're 6D now. We're at six dimensions for that Bertuzzi trade.
Attaboy, Perky!
Yeah. So, Elijah, one second,
Ryan. I just got to get this text in here from it's an unsigned text, but it's a good chirp. We were talking about Myers, and the texter sends in, Myers has been above average at best, but in this world, that's not too bad. Similar to TJ on the Larshcast.
Now, was he agreeing with you, or was he saying you're above average?
A little bit. He's saying he's been above average at best, but in this world, that's not bad. Similar to me on the Larshcast.
TJ's above average at best.
Yeah, okay. But it's still
insult to all of us.
So.
Hey, here's another text. Jarkko Ruotu came in the Bertuzzi deal too, so there you go.
Ooh. Oh, that's true.
We sickest are at seven dimensions of that deal. Now.
Sickest skate puck abilities of any player the Canucks have ever had.
Dude,
but Elijah, I got one fun one before you. We're running short up against the clock here, but I got to talk because I know you guys do these live streams, and obviously this is a live show, so we're familiar with some of the dynamics, but you guys are doing an Ask Me Anything portion as well too, and I got to ask, are you pre-screening these comments? Like, how difficult difficult is it to be doing a live stream show like this? And what's the weirdest, maybe you haven't actually read it on air, I don't know if you guys pre-screen, but what's the weirdest Ask Me Anything that somebody's given you while you guys are doing these live streams? And talk about some of the challenges of that as well.
Well, so we use a service called StreamYard. It kind of allows us to kind of like, we're controlling our stream. It goes on to four different channels, but it all comes back to one hub. So all the comments that people put through, before we put them on the screen, we can see what they are. I mean, they still live in that chat forever, but that's kind of our version of the pre-screen. But this is our first time doing the Ask Me Anything. And honestly, what I'm looking forward to is the weird. Like, I don't want the, like, who's the best player in the Canucks? I don't want that. I want, like, let's go. Let's just dive into the closet. Let's get as weird as we can possibly get.
That's why we love our Is This Anything segment too, because it's just like weird out in the ether. Yeah, that's the fun part.
Yeah, that's especially when you're live too, because that, like, you know, that adds a little dynamic to it, where, you know what, it's kind of like, let's show up, boys. Look, let's be funny for a little bit. And we like kind of an ego thing, but we think we're pretty funny, so.
We do too. No, I totally get that. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some of us are above average at best, but that's pretty good in this world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no kidding. Boys, I got a question for you before I head out.
All right, yeah. Elijah, lay it on us.
Who's got the worst bracket on the LarshCast right now?
That's probably me, because I didn't fill out a bracket.
Mine's non-existent, so.
I know, this is the first year I didn't fill one out. I don't know why, I guess. Yeah, we kind of missed it on slipped on that one.
But I was reading yesterday, Elijah, just because you said that I think only 0.4% of active brackets that are left are available to go undefeated, just because of how upsetting that loss was. So
yeah,
I think
that
one
was crazy,
right? So I think everybody's playing for second place at this point now. But it's there's too much exciting hockey on the go right now.
No kidding.
So before you go, Elijah, real quick, tell us about your pod and the members of your pod and your team, etc. Go ahead.
Yeah, so right now we're part of the Hockey Podcast Network, so a big hub for hockey shows. They have one for every team, and then they have a bunch of original content, basically just like a huge community of podcasts. But the Stick and Rink Boys, we strive to be one of the more unique podcasts out here. Like you said, there's dozens and dozens in Vancouver. We just try and get weird with it, man. We got myself, Elijah. We got my buddy Josh and our producer Raffle. We've been friends with each other for about 7+ years. Me and Raffle for about 10. Just childhood friends, man. We try and talk a little bit about Canucks, but we also like to say that we're not the X's and O's guys. We're the ridiculous opinions, the blind loyalists. That's what we are. I like to put the positive spin on things, and we like to get as weird as possible. So that's who we are.
Is that how I sound, guys? I'm just asking. Sat right.
A little bit,
yeah.
All right, Elijah, thank you for the time there, and we really got to go now, so thanks again. This was Elijah from Into the Podverse. Thanks for joining us. And you are listening to the LarshCast on Sportsnet 650 in the home of the Vancouver Canucks. Stick around.
Yeah, baby. Yeah. Woo! Back again. That's right. Luda. Meaner and meaner each time, baby. Feeling real.
It's time for Sportsnet Today. This is the LarshCast on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. You are with the LarshCast on Sportsnet 650. Ryan here with TJ, Sat, Joey, and producer Joel. And we are going to be discussing the game last night that was, the game this afternoon that's going to be, and some of the decision making. And I know something that's come out this morning that's of much interest to I think everybody in the fan base is the fact that Braden Holtby is going to be starting this game tonight, and it's going to be interesting. We're going to have Joey Kenward on shortly here to discuss, but before we bring him on, let's talk to the guys on the call right now and see. I know, TJ, you have some thoughts on goaltending deployment here. Are you what are your thoughts on Holtby getting the start tonight?
So I expected Holtby to get the start. I think it falls in line with the logic of not wanting to overplay your goaltender on two straight nights in a back-to-back situation, and there's always a risk of added fatigue or injury potentially in that scenario. And I know all of this goes into the thinking, and Ian Clark obviously is a huge factor in the decision making. But another reason why, and it goes to the whole conversation about traveling to Winnipeg or traveling back home to play Winnipeg, and wanting Demko to just play back to back and then avoid any concerns with travel. Well, the thing is about Demko, he stays the same whether or not he travels. He's still Thatcher Demko, the bubble Demko, the demigod, whatever you want to call it. You know, Bublé Demko is another one that people are saying. So
yes,
I'm sticking with demigod. But the bottom line is travel has not affected him at all, and so I don't think that went into the into the equation at all. So yeah, and Braden Holtby needs to play. I mean,
yeah,
let's say we do go down the stretch here and make it interesting all the way to the end of the season, or even make the playoffs. You're going to need another goaltender to step up at some point. You know, it's just how things work, and you can't just ride a number one the entire way. So Braden Holtby's had a lot of time to work with Ian Clark here, a lot of practice time, as Thatcher Demko has taken that number one spot, just like that song you heard, Joey Kenward submission there. But I have no other that's pretty much all I wanted to say. I think it's the right decision, mm-hmm. and I stand behind it. Yeah,
it's interesting to see. I don't know. What are your thoughts, Joey? Sad. Do you guys have any pertinent thoughts on this? To me, I mean, this is one of those things where they need to get Demko some rest here with the amount of rubber he's faced, for him to be good to go down the stretch. And arguably, like I said, this is the biggest game that the Canucks have had this season, just because of who they're playing and where they're at in the standings. But this is also going to be, in my opinion, Holtby's biggest game of his tenure with the Vancouver Canucks, because if he comes out and lays an egg tonight, there's no way they're going to be able to trust him. It's basically going to be the Demko show for the rest of the season. I don't know, Joey, what do you think?
Well, I mean, in terms of Thatcher Demko this year, he's seen more rubber than a dead skunk on the Trans-Canada Highway. He has been absolutely lights out for the Canucks, and it kind of leads me, it's an old Don Cherry line, I'm sorry, it kind of leads me to think that why wouldn't we just kind of Grant Fuhr it with him, just play him for like 95% of the games if he's willing to do it, because Demko's there. He missed a few years as his time as a starter because of the whole goalie thing that we had going on before Demko emerged. And I think it's time that we could just ride Demko. But this is a big game for Holtby. If he can prove that he is a dependable backup, we can at least see him get into the mix a bit more. But if he lays an egg, it's like, all right, get Mikey DiPietro on the bench.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, it's a hell of a big game tonight, and we're going to talk about that with Joey Kenward in just a minute here. And as always, he's brought to you by HBD Homes, design new home builder with over 20 years of experience. You can visit their website, hbdhomes.ca, their Instagram page at @HBD_homes, or call them at 778-968-1491. And with that, we welcome to the program Joey Kenward. How you doing this morning, Joey? Back again.
That's right. I'm well, guys.
We're doing pretty well here. We're just kind of discussing the Holtby situation and our thoughts on that. And what's your sense of this? Is this a kind of a must from the Canucks just because of how many pucks Demko's faced? Or is this just getting him some action because he's sitting so long? Or seeing what you have left? And conversely, if Holtby comes out and lays an egg, is it Demko's show pretty much the rest of the way? What are your thoughts, Joey?
Well, kind of a loaded question there. I'll do my best to answer it.
A little bit, guys, yeah. Sorry.
when you have Ian McIntyre, and boy, am I glad you guys get iMac on your program for the first time.
Us too.
Today,
us
later
too.
On.
Huge.
Very excited to talk.
Him and I might have differing opinions here, and that's good.
Yes.
Maybe you'll have us on at the same time in the future. You never know. Now that would be a ratings driver, let me tell you.
Love it.
I'm not surprised that this is the call that's being made. But in the moment that we're in, and considering the way he's playing, it wouldn't have surprised me at all if they decided to go with Demko tonight. But for all of the reasons, and maybe the biggest is scheduling and the fact of travel, that putting Holtby in is probably the wisest decision you could make. Now, to your point about you know what happens after he gets in and after they drop the puck, let's get to that after the game is played. You know, we could play the shoulda, coulda, woulda game all day long before they even start hitting the ice. And it really wouldn't accomplish anything right now. They need a big performance from him, but make no mistake about it, with what's at stake and who they're playing, they need a big performance from everybody tonight.
Yeah.
They've been getting results, and that's priority number one. Have they been of the ugly variety? Some of them have, but the results don't lie. And they need to find a way to be a better team tonight, I think, through a full 60 minutes. They were good last night. I really liked their road game last night. But they're probably going to have to be even a better team tonight if they want to get 2 points and not allow the Habs to get any on home ice.
All right. So Joey, let's talk about those other players that kind of need to step up to maybe not insulate the goaltending tonight, but maybe make it a little bit easier for Braden Holtby. And, you know, and one player I want to, you know, own in on is Adam Gaudette. He's played his best games this season against the Habs, and you know he's risen to the occasion when the Canucks have needed him, especially lately in the past couple of weeks against the Habs. So is he one player that you're looking for kind of another step to maybe get, not necessarily score today, but at least drive offense? And he could, I think he can help definitely with, you know, the Canucks win this game.
Well, I mean, half of the goals he scored this year have come against Montreal. So right there, you realize that whenever he's facing that team, he's obviously feeling pretty good about himself based on what he's been able to accomplish in the meetings with the Habs to this point this season. It's not just going to have to be him. It's going to have to be a lot of other players that are responsible with the puck. This game tonight is all about puck protection, guys, because you can't afford to turn it over to Montreal, because, and when they did last night, Demko bailed them out. But Montreal's proven a lot this season in games against Vancouver that if the Canucks turn the puck over, they're going to make them pay. The one other element that I think will also be key, and this would be key and has been key with Demko playing, and it will also need to be key tonight with Holtby in net, is the will to win factor. And I know this is something that has not been talked a lot about in the market, but the Vancouver Canucks have blocked more shots than any team in the league. And I think when you look back in their last five of their last seven games, minimum 20 block shots a night. Now that right away tells you that they're getting shot on a lot, because Demko's save totals have been sky high, but those in front of him have been, you know, laying it out there to do what they can to win. Has this big run of success they've been on primarily because of goaltending? Absolutely. But don't think for a second that what was playing in front of whoever's between the pipes have been laying it on the line to try to get the team success. And that will probably need to be a talking point tonight as they take on the Habs for the final time in Montreal.
We saw Tyler Mott come back into the lineup the second game against Ottawa. And I think, at least from my view, his impact was felt tremendously last night in the game against Montreal. Having a guy like that on the penalty kill who can generate like that and make those shorthanded opportunities, what does it do for the confidence of the Canucks team when they get shorthanded, knowing they have a better chance of killing off a penalty with a guy like that out there?
Well, he's certainly been just a real go-to player in any situation, whether it's been on the PK or even strength or 4-on-4, whatever the scenario has been, whenever Travis Green has looked down on the bench and needs something from Tyler Mott, he has no hesitation to throw him over the boards. And, you know, the Canucks didn't have a great record with him out. I don't think it's because it was all of Tyler Mott being sidelined as to why Vancouver's record wasn't great. But when he's been in the lineup, they have been a tougher team to play against. And they seem to feed off the energy that Mott has in whatever game situation he's performing in. And you're right, on the penalty kill, he's been very, very effective. Like, the Canucks have been knocking on the door the last couple of weeks here of being a top 10 team in the league on the PK. And they're going to need to continue to be a good team on special teams as they roll forward here. So he's certainly been welcomed back with open arms, and they're going to need him to keep playing that same style of play no matter what situation he's in, if they want to continue to keep alive and stay in the race.
So The Canucks also claimed Jimmy Vesey off waivers this past week from the Toronto Maple Leafs. And, you know, it's kind of sheer luck, I'd say, that the Canucks make the claim and then Tanner Pearson goes down with injury around the same time. So what do we expect from Jimmy Vesey, and where does he really fit in the Canucks lineup, you know, for this year? And let's leave it at that for now. But what do you want to see from him in terms of maybe production or just, like, how is he going to affect any of the games going forward?
Well, certainly a guy that's proven in the past that he can score. right? Hasn't had a great start this season when it comes to getting the light turned on. I think he's only scored 5 goals in 31 games. But in the past, he's been a double-digit goal scorer in this league. And they need him, especially now in Pearson's absence, no matter how long he might be sidelined, they're going to need to have him thinking shoot first when on the ice. Does it fall into their lap? Yeah, probably. I don't know if they would have been looking for a player like that to come available on the waiver wire. But when they did, I don't think there was any hesitation that they put the claim in. And who knows how many teams around the league would have put the claim in. That might have been a long list of teams trying to get VC when they saw him go onto the waiver wire. But they'll need him to be a more offensive contributor than what he's been this season. He's going to get the opportunity. There's no doubt about that, especially now in the absence of Pearson and where this team has players slotted in on the depth chart. But they need him to be able to provide offense here if they want to continue to stay in the thick of it here and try to keep their playoff hopes alive.
We are talking to Joey Kenward of Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet family here on the LarshCast. Joey, I wanted to ask you, do you think Toronto is going to regret going with Alex Galchenyuk over Jimmy Vesey? Because I believe that is the swap that they've made here.
Yeah, you know what? Don't see it that way. I know a lot of people would think that was the scenario, but cap implications, you know, Toronto's up against it. And with Wayne Simmonds coming back off of IR, they needed to make space. They needed to make space. So I don't think this.
Yeah, instead of waiving Galchenyuk, they waived VC, right? Isn't that?
Well, remember, Galchenyuk was already in the minors and had been brought back to the taxi squad prior to VC being placed on waivers. So I don't think it was the Leafs thinking, yeah, let's roll the dice with Galchenyuk and give up on VC. I don't think that was the case at all. I think just numbers-wise and where they were dollars-wise, as far as their roster, active roster is concerned, and trying to get guys back in the lineup that they are depending more on, i.e. Wayne Simmonds, that VC was the odd man out. Who knows? I mean, Alex Galchenyuk has been one of the most underachieving forwards based on where he was taken in the draft in the last
seven
decade
teams
out of any
now.
Player in the league, right? Seventh out of any team, player yeah. in the league. Is Toronto going to regret it? I don't know. But I don't think they've got bigger fish to fry with trying to build for what they hope can be a long playoff run as opposed to whether it's just VC or Galchenyuk that might be the determining factor as to what puts them over the top.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that one plays out. I mean, I'm from a Canucks perspective, I'm certainly glad that they waived VC because I think he's a great pickup for the Canucks. But I just want to talk about, I know a lot's been made about the matchup last night and the reffing. Say what you will, in my opinion, it wasn't the strongest and there probably shouldn't have gone to overtime. Yeah, maybe that's an understatement.
Wasn't the strongest. Yeah,
well, I'm trying to remain neutral here. But I just want to get the sense of, with this being an incredibly important game for Vancouver, it's, if I'm not mistaken, it's the last time they're going to play Montreal this year. With the reffing situation that they had last game, are you expecting a really, really chippy game here? Both teams are going to come out hitting hard, or what's your expectation of this game going in tonight, Joey, I guess is my question.
Well, you might not like to hear this, but it's the same referees in charge tonight as it was last night.
Oh, dear. A makeup game then. They can do better today.
But that's not a surprise with the travel schedules the referees have. That's more often than not, you go back and look at all the games the Canucks have played. The referees, they've got one night, they've got the next night. Did those guys have a bit of an off night last night? Sure. They'd probably be the first ones to admit it when looking back on the game film. But I don't know if that was the determining fact. If there's one downside last night, if you're a Canucks fan, that you're just absolutely as great a role as they've been on, the only negative about last night is the fact they gave up a point to Montreal.
That's it.
If they had gotten two and the Habs had gotten nothing, they would have been way, way more feeling better about themselves. You're going to take the 2 points. You're not going to complain about that. But right now, they can't afford to let any points be left on the table when they're playing interdivision rivals, especially those that they're chasing. But yeah, whether it was because of the referees or because of undisciplined play, whatever, it's you can't dwell on it now. Got to look ahead, and we'll see how it shakes out. I just think the whole conversation about Holtby getting back in, not a lot of people realize this is the longest in his career as a professional when he's been healthy, playing from one start to the next.
Oh, 18 wow. days, yeah. I just thought.
The last time he sat this long was back in March of 2014, and that's when the Washington Capitals picked up Jaro Halak at the trade deadline. And after that, they rode Halak for a couple of weeks, and Holtby had to sit and watch. So this is unfamiliar territory for him. So I'm really interested to see how he responds. He's going into a building where his stats as a career netminder are eye-popping. But it's not just all about Holtby tonight. Canucks cannot afford to leave anything on the table tonight here against the Habs.
Just for the listeners, it's an 18-day break here, and that one that Kenward just referenced was a 16-day gap after the Caps acquired Halak there. But go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, I'm curious just to see. Edler took a puck to the shoulder pretty heavily. He left the game but returned last night. Have you heard anything on whether he's suffering any ill effects from that hit? Because he's been such a key factor in the Canucks getting their defensive game starting to round into form here.
I haven't heard any update on his status. I would think that if there was any news on that, we probably would have heard about that from Travis Green this morning when he spoke with the media, but the only lineup news that he had was the fact that Holtby was playing. But yeah, I think that when you saw Edler's reaction immediately, like I thought, I don't see him coming back into the game. He didn't
exactly.
Guys, he didn't miss a shift.
He didn't. No, I know. It's crazy.
So, you know, for a player that's only missed one game this year, and the fact that he's another year older, he's looking like the Alex Edler Canucks fans have been used to seeing many, many years ago. He's not getting extra minutes based on power play time. In fact, I don't even think he's played more than 3 total minutes all season on the power play. His minutes are being managed better. He's turned in and continues to be one of the better penalty killers for this club. And he's, I think, top 3 in the league, guys, in shots blocked. Now, that one that he took last night probably hurt more than most. But that's a sign that this is a guy that's showing, even if he's the oldest guy inside that locker room amongst the players that are suiting up night in and night out, that he's showing a will to win. And that's, I'm sure, being seen loud and clear by the younger players around him. And there's no doubt they need him moving forward here to keep going the way he has been. We'll see if he can continue that with the rest of his defense corps tonight against Montreal.
You're absolutely right, Joey. And it's, you know, what's almost more impressive about the whole thing is we know the book on Edler for his career as well, too, that he's been an injury-riddled player, and to still be doing this at a high level, blocking those shots, and have one of the healthiest stretches of his career as well is something that's incredibly, incredibly impressive. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing your insights today with us on the LarshCast. Once again, we've been chatting with Joey Kenward of Kenward's Corner on this Canucks game day. So thanks so much again for joining us.
And Canucks Connected, I believe. Is it Sports Connected?
Tell us.
Canucks Connected. Who's coming up for that show today?
Oh, that's right.
Coming up
today,
sir. At 2 o'clock. This is going to lead right into the pregame show with Sat and Bick. We've got Brett Hedekin, who played
great skater.
Played for the Canucks. Yes. A lot of people don't realize played at the Olympics twice. One of the more underrated defensemen of his generation, played more than 1,000 games in the league. He's going to join us. And guys, the first ever forward in Canucks history who went to the NHL All-Star game, and I know none of you guys ever saw him play, but he was an entertaining player whenever he got on the puck at the Pacific Coliseum. And it's former forward Dennis Vebjerg, who I think had the NHL record for the 2 fastest goals scored at an NHL All-Star game. He was one of the first 30 goal scorers in franchise history. He's a great storyteller. So we've got Dennis Vebjerg and Brett Hedekin joining us for Canucks Connected coming up at 2 o'clock this afternoon.
Can't miss.
And we'll talk about the most important trade in franchise history, which occurred on this day 25 years ago.
25 years ago today.
Absolutely. And you just inherently answered our poll question at the same time too. So thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Take care, Joey. That was, of course, Joey Kenward, And we are the LarshCast here on Sportsnet 650, home of the Canucks.
It's time for Sportsnet Today. This is the LarshCast on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. You're with the LarshCast on Sportsnet 650 on this game day broadcast. The Canucks are going to be playing the Montreal Canadiens for the final time this season at 4 o'clock this afternoon. We've had Joey Kenward on just in the previous segment, and we also had Elijah of the Stick and Rink podcast on earlier discussing where this team's at and breaking down some of our happiness and our frustrations with this team. And I got to imagine after last night's game that the number one frustration that's on everybody's mind, I would assume, has got to be the reffing, or dare I say lack thereof, in last night's game. I think the Canucks, we're going to talk about this a little bit more in the Is This Anything from the conspiracy side angle as well, too, because TJ's got something on that. But I know he's going to speak for the fan base here, because he's about as hot under the collar as anybody that we've talked to or heard from this morning about said reffing from last night. Hopefully he's had a chance to do that. I think like what divers do before they go on one of those deep dives, they do that pre-breathing thing to make sure they've got enough oxygen. So TJ's got his tank here because I think he wants to go.
Yeah. So
bit
before
here.
He, before he gets, go, I'm just going to set this up. You know, we've had TJ talks or Tej talks. We've had Nav speaks, you know, we're going to wrap that up and we're going to go on to the LarshCast loudspeaker. So, you know, right now, TJ, you got the loudspeaker, you go ahead. Oh, what do you want to? What do you want to speak about?
I mean, instead of pre-breathing, I think I was pre-punching the wall or banging it with my head there. But, you know, I'm getting sick and tired of the Eastern bias, okay? And I call it that because it's all-encompassing and the reffing on display falls under that umbrella. And I take it back to, you know, Aaron Rome getting suspended, you know, a 4-game suspension in the Stanley Cup Finals, equivalent to a 40-game suspension in the regular season. That was absolute crap, and we all know it. Then you go out, you know, Alex Burrows, constantly being made out to be a villain on Hockey Night in Canada. Meanwhile, the rat weasel himself, Brad Marchand, is constantly praised. You know, he's always praised. Then you go to the Luongo recapture penalty. Are you kidding me? Do I even have to say anything more than that? We all know. We all know. And we know it's completely full of it. And then even further, just most recently, how about Bell canceling TSN 1040? Is that not Eastern bias? That was a great radio station here in Vancouver. 20 years of history gone. Just like that. We know damn well the league wants a Habs versus Leafs first round matchup so the top 1% can rake in the profits. These refs are deliberately ignoring calls on the ice to further that agenda. That pick on Horvat in overtime was one of the most egregious examples of that I've ever seen. If that happened to the Leafs or Habs, 10 times out of 10, that is getting blown dead before Josh Anderson even gets excited about the breakaway. And we all know it was more than just that. All game long, the Habs got away with countless bull crap. Seeing two power plays as a result of it all is an absolute disgrace. And as a lifelong fan of this team and this game, I am disappointed in that end result. Call it square. Let the players play.
Whew. Coming correct. I mean, I we're going to dig into the kind of East Coast bias portion of it in the Is This Anything portion of the show coming up at 11 o'clock. And by the way, please, guys, get your submissions in. Tag them. Hashtag Is This Anything as well. Your rumors, your conspiracy theories, your East Coast bias opinions and thoughts. We're going to break that down a little bit more. But TJ, you absolutely nailed it. Whether you want to talk about the East Coast bias or not, last night's game was unacceptable to see for a team that's fighting for their playoff lives, and every game matters a huge amount. Like, we talked to Joey Kenward in the last segment about, you know, how the Canucks should be disappointed that they didn't keep that loser point away from Montreal last night. Well, I would argue that that's probably in portion to the way that game was reffed. Now, I think in terms of the conspiracy, if you were to average out all of that stuff over the lifetime of a franchise, most most teams, I would think you would say, get their fair share going both ways. But, man, when we have a game like last night and we see the reffing go the way it does when they're fighting for their playoff lives, it stings. And it does not help that we're playing 4 o'clock starts. Like, we've talked on the LarshCast already, you know, in our personal chats about how difficult it is as full-time workers to watch shows at watch, you know, to be engaged with this team with all these 4 o'clock start times, let alone what's happening with the reffing last night. So,
hang on. So I got to step in here. Sorry, not to step on your toes.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Playoff lives, okay? So you said a couple of times the Canucks are fighting for the playoff lives.
Potential playoff lives. Okay.
Okay, so right now the Canucks are not fighting for any playoff spot. They're still fighting to get into the fight for a playoff spot.
They're keeping the dream alive. So let me say that's what I say by playoff lives. They're statistical playoff lives, I should clarify. Yeah.
I mean, we haven't talked much about it. I mentioned it earlier in the show. The Canucks need to go something like 16-6 in some combination of, you know, 30 to 32 points, right, in the remaining 22 games. That is a great, great pace for even a good team. Like, I'm a positive person. I don't know how that's going to be sustainable over the next 22 games, considering they've already done that for 10, right? So for 32 games, more than half the season, you expect the Canucks to play at like a 700 pace. I mean, that is tough to do for the Tampa Bay Lightnings of the league.
But
how are the Canucks going to do that?
But look at what they're doing right now without their franchise centerman, Elias Pettersson.
What does that tell you? Before he got injured, they were playing like crap. Well, he gets injured and they start playing well all of a sudden.
You know the old age-old adage, like, next man up, everybody has to step up, you know, win by committee. All those things ring true, and that's what's happening. The team knew they had to step up because their number one center and franchise centerman was injured, and he was going to be injured long term. The team knows his timeline. They may not tell the fans, but the team knows, and they've all collectively stepped up to the plate, and, you know, that's quite a remarkable achievement. You can't say anything else about that. You know, the heart in that locker room. You know, we saw it on display last year in the playoff bubble, you know, the way this team came together. And, yeah, they lost a few core pieces of that. You know, their starting goalie for one and the heart and soul of their defense, Tanev. But look at how they've rebounded after a miserable start to the year. And, you know, easily could have gone further sideways, but they've rallied together. And now they're winning without Pettersson. That's quite a remarkable achievement. You have to give the team credit, and I believe this team has what it takes to make a playoff, you know, make the playoffs possible. It's going to go down to the wire.
We have a caller on the line, Brian from Coquitlam, I think. Joel, do we have him on the line now? All right.
Oh, here we
go. Brian from Coquitlam, you want to talk about the reffing, and maybe you disagree with something that was said on the show here today. Please elaborate.
Well, you know, I mean, there's bad calls made on, you could take any game that you see and there's bad calls made on both sides. You guys got to suck it up. I mean, you can't blame the reffing for if it's egregious, the worst one I've ever seen was the 94 one where Messier hit Linden. There should have been a penalty on that one, but that's the one. That was a real homer call, that one, but
Let me ask you, Brian, about that pick in overtime. Like, tell me, how was that a missed call? That pick in overtime that was, everybody knew it was a pick. It was clear as day. So tell me about that, Brian.
Yeah, I'll give you that was a pick, but what was the result?
Well, it doesn't matter. They could have scored, and that would have been a Habs victory.
JT Miller got the puck and bang was in the net. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah, but the thing is, a penalty is a penalty here, whether it's overtime or whatever. But, Brian, can I ask you a question? Whether or not you agree there's a bias, would you or would you not agree that the reffing last night was subpar and that it had a negative effect on the Canucks' power play opportunities?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, but that's one game. I mean, come on. What's going to happen tonight? If, say, the Canucks get some calls against, say calls aren't called against the Canucks, what are you guys going to say then, you know?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. Thank you.
Every game, I played the game. I'm a Western boy anyway, so I don't blame the refs. I mean, yeah, you could go back to some of the old games One of the worst ones, well, take the Bertuzzi incident. To me, that cost us the Stanley Cup out here. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for the call, Brian. And you know, let's discuss that a bit here, guys. So again, thanks to Brian from Coquitlam for the call and disagreeing with TJ on the refing. So it's
always down for that.
Yeah.
And score Bertuzzi, one in the Nav point column there.
Right. And it's funny he mentioned Bertuzzi, because when we had him on the podcast version of the Larshcast, he actually talked about, you know, that situation and how they left money on the table and they probably had a cup in their sights. So, I mean, he's not wrong to a certain extent. But I mean, look, even when pressed, he said the same thing, that yes, maybe the reffing last night was bad. Okay, well, I mean, and like I say, it probably averages itself out over the course of a season and over the course of a franchise history. But when you see games like that, and you know, I mean, Sat, you're absolutely right. It's not fighting for their playoff lives. It's fighting to stay statistically alive in the playoffs right now. So I should be wording that better. But when you have a team that's doing that, and you talk about the lack of revenue and fan engagement, and all the things that go around with it, having a team that's still potentially able to make the playoffs does increase the value of that brand as they finish out the season as well too. So it's you look at it from a fiscal and financial side as well too. You know, the longer the Canucks stay in this hunt, the longer the engagement stays up as well too. So there's a few factors at play here, and it's just whether or not that was a bad game last night. The refs have to be better tonight. Yeah, hey, so what do you think?
Refing aside, like it's one of those things that, if you're a good team and if you play the right way, you more often than not, you're not going to be complaining about the penalties that are not called against you, right?
True.
It's the other parts of the game. It's kind of a distraction to everything else. You know, the Canucks, you know, we're talking about that penalty in overtime that, you know, should have been called, but they shouldn't have got to that point to begin with. You know, if you play the right way and you close out a game, then you shouldn't be in those positions where it's going to affect you as much, you know?
Let's hear from Bob in North Van, also here to call about the East Coast bias. Bob, how are you doing?
It's all good. I was listening to the bit about the Eastern bias, and for me, I've always kind of felt that there's an Eastern bias, but the trigger for me was back when we had the World Juniors here, and they changed the gold medal game to 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so that it was all fine and dandy for the Eastern participants to watch and view the game and stuff, where us out here, we had to change the gold medal game to 4 o'clock. So if you're working or whatever, it didn't matter. Gold medal game was at 4, bronze game was at 7. Never happened that way before in World Juniors. If they're playing in Sweden or somewhere else and the gold medal game's at 6 in the morning, you got to get up and watch it. But when it was played out here, we accommodated the Eastern, or were forced to accommodate the Eastern side of the country. And that was one of the most successful World Juniors there was. And we did it out here, but like I said, the bias is there. And it just, mm-hmm. That was my trigger to the Eastern bias that really kind of put me over the top.
Well, you're absolutely right for that one, Bob. Thanks for calling. It was really well put. I think the Eastern bias has always been a thing that us Canucks fans have felt. You can throw it back to 92 when McLean missed out on the Vezina trophy. You can throw it back to 07 when Luongo missed out on the Vezina, to Brodeur, who faced 15 shots a game. Meanwhile, Luongo was the entire team. The East Coast bias has always been a thing in the National Hockey League, but the biggest victims of it have always been the Vancouver Canucks. Because you can make an extent that the California team suffered as well. Jonathan Quick definitely should have got a Vezina at one point in his career. But I think with time changes, and you can throw the referee conversation back into it, there's always going to be the discussion for it. But at times it does flop back the other way. Look how well it turns out for the Oilers. There's not an East Coast bias towards the Alberta teams. It's just us entirely on the Pacific coast. Like, if we can see the ocean, we have to stop.
It's really a West Coast anti-bias.
But the thing is, like, you look at the way North America is, the bias is because of the populations, right? The population centers across North America are towards the east. And
except
that's just
California.
A fact. Well, no, even in the States, California's got a lot of population, but the East Coast is still a lot more, right? So it's just the way it is. They have to cater to the fans, and the majority of the fans just happen to be out east. The top three markets in Canada are Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, right? Two of them are within 8 hours of another.
Yeah.
That's just the way it's going to work.
All right. So we've, you know, talked a little bit here about the refs and the East Coast bias here. I want to flip the switch a little bit here And I mean, as everybody said what they wanted to say, I just want to make sure you guys got all the chance there to.
I want to tackle the conspiracy theory a bit more at 11 o'clock.
Okay,
but
so
in terms of the actual X's and O's, I think we're good.
Sure. Okay. So we'll get into a little bit more there. But I just want to talk about Bo freaking Horvat for a second here.
Mm.
Old captain or Bo captain, my captain. One of the, you know, one of the players that's leading the charge here for the last, you know, streak or the month of March or since they've turned it around has been Bo Horvat. And early on this season, he was getting ripped by some, you know, fans and even members of the media just calling him out, saying he needs to do more or he's not doing enough. And, you know, criticism is what it is. But I think he needs to get a little bit more praise for what he's doing and how he's stepping up. And, you know, some of the little things that he's doing that I've noticed – he's playing with such an edge that I've noticed, you know, I don't know if you guys caught this last night especially, but he's cross-checking the opposing center off the draw. Did you guys notice that? Like, after almost every draw in the third or even to start overtime, Bo is playing with such a massive edge. He's giving it to the guy with a nasty cross-check, which by no means should be called a penalty because if you know hockey, that is as common in the playoffs as Andrew Walker getting ripped on the 650 text line. So the point being, he's starting to figure it out. He's starting to figure it out what it truly takes to win in this league, the edge that it constantly requires to play with, to intimidate with, to let it be known that you aren't to be trifled with, that if you're coming at me, you better be on your best behavior with. And that's something that will inspire any team, and I'm here for it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, he took it upon himself And Bo Horvat even was on record in the past week saying that, you know, the team's got to help out Thatcher Demko. He can't do it on his own. And then he went out and he showed it, as a captain should. Like, I know we're praising him for what he's done, but what else do you expect from your captain? What else do you expect from your captain who isn't a bona fide superstar, top 10 player in the league, is going to put up all the points? Like, he has the ability to put up a lot of goals and a lot of points, but he's not there in a top 10 center in the league. Right, so he needs to show it in other ways, and that's exactly what you're talking about there, Tej. Is he needs to be the driving force for the Canucks to have success. So the fact that he's showing things is great. The fact that we're talking about him showing these things is probably not a good discussion to have because we shouldn't have to talk about it.
Yeah, you know? No, it's such a good point, Adam. And what's the thing that we hear all the time? And it's kind of one of those cliche phrases. It's like every time a player does an interview, they talk about how they got to back check and make their own bounces and that sort of thing. But it's your best players need to be your best players. And it's a bit of a deceiving conversation with Bo Horvat because when he's at his best, he's not as noticeable. I mean, granted, he's got his great truculent rushes to the front of the net and he's got those bursts of speed and he can make some pretty sick plays with his hands. But when he's at his best, it's a lot of the things that casual fans won't notice. It's his ability to go into quarters and retrieve pucks. It's his ability to find outlet passes and not turn the puck over. It's all these little things that he does defensively that make him an exceptional player, let alone the fact that he also has to draw a lot of attention on any line that he's on because you know he can get that burst of speed and potentially beat you on the outside and do something offensively as well, too. So, you know, a high-functioning Bo Horvat is hugely, hugely important to this team. And like TJ mentioned, no captain, my captain. There's a reason this guy is the captain because he is the emotional precursor for this team across the board, I would argue. And maybe Edler on defense would be the other guy that we were talking about earlier. But yeah, Bo is exceptional right now.
Never makes any excuses.
No, that's it. Owns it. Goes to every press conference like the Sedins back in the day where they have a bad game, they'll still go and answer every question with class and put the team's emotional compass on their shoulders.
But it's funny you mentioned the Sedins. One thing that I think they learned it too late in their career, but one thing I wish they had leading up to 2011 was that edge.
For sure.
Because if they had that edge, you wouldn't see Brad Marchand, that rat weasel, punching Daniel Sedin 15 times and getting away with it.
No question, you know? Yeah.
And that kind of irked me.
He's got
me
the fire.
It pissed me off a little bit about the Sedins, and I love the Sedins. We all love the Sedins. They are historic Vancouver Canucks. I actually wish they would rename East and West Boulevard as Daniel or Hank and Dank Boulevard. They need to do that. The only twin,
meet you on
twin
the corner
roads,
of Hank and Dank.
The only twin streets in the city of Vancouver need to be renamed after the twins. Hank and Dank Boulevard, East and West Boulevard. But anyways, going back to
that.
Sign
the petition. Let's go.
they didn't have that edge, and you need that edge to win. You need to intimidate your opponents, and Bo is playing with that edge. And here's a text coming in I think it's from towards you here, but it says, he also noticed Horvat staring down the other centerman during the faceoffs. And he says, who was famous for that? Mark freaking Messier. Messier sucks, by the way, but
I was going to say, what a weird argument.
In a complimentary way, you know, you gotta say that he did win the cup, and he did, you know, he is one of the, well, self-proclaimed greatest leaders in the league, and so you got to give it to
that. Award should be named after Steve Yzerman, and we all know it.
I agree. Yeah, but anyways, yeah, I just love seeing that about Bowen, and you know, honestly, this team needs him, especially with Petey out, and JT Miller, you know, those two centers now are leading the way. And I hope that JT Miller stays as center even when Pedersen comes back.
Totally.
I totally agree.
Such a strong, you know, such strong center depth when you go Petey, Miller, and Bo down the middle, and then Sutter or Beagle on that fourth line.
You know, Sutter's actually
expendable, guys. Like, he should be traded for an asset regardless of a playoff
Absolutely.
Chase.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah.
You know, the funny thing about, you know, putting Miller back at center is that was the problem that Tampa Bay had. And that was one of the reasons they decided to trade JT Miller, is he was, you know, lost on their third line. Now, granted, Tampa had an amazing forward core that the Canucks, you know, don't really have all filled out.
We could dream of.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right?
Our all-time roster doesn't equal what Tampa had last year.
they're a team that's, you know, the pinnacle of the NHL. But the whole thing goes back to, when JT Miller came to the Canucks, you know, everyone assumed he was going to be center, and then they put him on the left wing with Petey and Besser, and it's like, holy smokes, this is great. You know, this is exactly what the Canucks need. And now the Canucks have that kind of secondary offense that's drying up, and the fallback is putting Miller back at center. So it opens up definitely holes on the wings again, right? So, I mean, it might be good temporarily, but there's a bigger issue at play. And, you know, Claude Colson might help on one side. But there's still a couple holes.
VC helps for sure. Or potentially,
No,
you're right,
that
maybe.
Pearson is injured right now. I mean, you would have loved to have seen VC and Pearson, you know, in this lineup and to see the depth in that regard. But, you know, Pearson, I don't know what value he's going to have at the deadline and whether or not the Canucks are going to be in that position.
Not now that he's injured, yeah.
Well, now that he's injured, but if he comes back, you know, in time for the deadline, he's still Tanner Pearson. He still puts up 0.46 points a game, career average. And we know what he did last year with Bo, and this year the Canucks obviously struggled out of the gate, but Tanner still might fetch some value, and I just don't know what the Canucks are going to do, because I actually think that his value might even tank in terms of a contract here, and he might actually come cheaper for us because he's injured and missing games, and VC's now in the mix. Maybe Tanner wants to stay here. Maybe he goes a little cheaper than his initial ask, and you get him for like $2.5 million a couple years.
What's going to happen, I think, is that Pearson, no matter where he signs, whether it's the Canucks or any other team, it's a one-year deal now, because he has to show that he's not going to score just 3-4 goals in the season, right? He needs to get up around 15 to 25 goals in that range, right? And it's a big range, I know it is, but that's his expectation. And if he's making $2.5-3.5 million in this flat cap, you need that kind of production out of, you know, a second or third line left winger. You have to. So he's got to show it for a year before he's going to cash in on a, you know, a 2 or 3 year contract. Now I think his long term or his aspirations at a contract longer than one season, they're gone.
Yeah, no, it's such a good point. And we got Torgi here texting in as well too, making a good point that some of Pearson's value is based on his reputation from the past as well too. And TJ, you kind of mentioned it with the fact that he, you know, career average is just shy of a half a point a game as well too. I mean, I think he's got value. I mean, ideally, especially with the Canucks having VC coming in and the fact that, you know, they've got some room on this roster right now to look at Pearson as potentially expendable, I think is a bit of an easier conversation. It does help soften his contract negotiation talks as well too, because this team, you know, as the pieces start to come together, players are going to want to be a part of that moving forward as well too. So my hope is that they can re-sign Pearson at a reasonable level, but you know, with the amount of depth they have, he could potentially be expendable. I mean, another guy that we haven't really talked about yet, but we maybe can in the last segment here, get McIntyre's opinion on it as well too, is what's happening. I just lost my train of thought there entirely. It's gone.
Well, and you called him McIntyre. It's iMac or Ian McIntyre. Come on. You just called him McIntyre, Ryan. Go get a coffee.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Sorry. In all fairness, I got a fairly important text message, and I made the cardinal sin of reading my phone while I was talking. And You know what? I'm just going to end the misery here, and you're listening to the LarshCast on Sportsnet 650. My apologies.
We'll be back with Is This Anything? Stay tuned.
And now, introducing the starting lineup for the LarshCast. TJ, Ryan, Sat, Joey, and Nav on Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to the LarshCast. My name is Tej, and I'm here with Ryan, Mr. Scrambled Eggs Brain there. And
it was Roussel, by the way, guys, before I had my great brain fart of 2021. It was Roussel. I'd be scared to be Roussel. And before you continue, TJ, I just got to ask, this cut that you've had us coming into after the break here, is this like a dubstep version of the Crazy Town song Butterfly?
It samples Butterfly. It's a London-based hip-hop artist. His name is Hoodie. Huh.
It's a double sample.
That's an instrument to his song. It's called Ain't It Different, and it does sample Crazy Town.
Butterfly. Come my lady.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're all kids in the 90s.
So
hey Ryan, your mid-30s is showing.
Okay, listen. Yeah, it really is. Okay, I just turned 38 in March. March 12th, the COVID anniversary is actually my birthday as well too. And I'm definitely showing my age on there. Maybe we'll come back to Chumbawamba next break.
Also on the show then, as I was going to finish there, is Joey Pitts.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
he's back in action in the BCHL, announcing for the Penticton V's. I can't wait to hear an update on that, Joey, in just a moment.
Well,
and also the last and final member of tonight's show or today's show is Casey Middlesat.
Middlesat.
He's always in the middle. You know, stays in the middle. Never has a hot take.
I gotta push back on you a lot more today because Nav's not with us, and you know you need that little extra balance because you're so far out in left field.
I feel like both have sat
fired up today.
We've been like the light side, you know, like trying to balance it out with in Nav's absence. You and I have kind of joined forces to try and be the counterpoint today.
The thing is, though, when Nav leaves, it's such a weight that's lifted off of my shoulders that I just feel free because
there's nobody here to tell you to kick rocks.
You're like if Genny Malkin when Crosby's hurt. Hey, you finally have your time to shine.
Great analogy. I love that. There you go. okay, so we are doing a segment here. We love this segment. It's called Is This Anything? We see the text line is already popping. A lot of good submissions so far, and we'll get to as many of them as we can, hopefully all of them. But keep sending in your submissions. Any crazy conspiracies, hockey-related or not, send them in, 650-650 on the Dunbar-Lumbar text line there. And I'm going to start off with my own before we get to these submissions. And this and before we get to my own, let's officially start Is This Anything?
Ladies and gentlemen, time now for a little something we call Is This Anything?
Is this anything?
Woo!
All right, so... Oh, I love that music in the background there. Here is my Is This Anything? Is the Canadian division actually one of the strongest divisions? And hear me out before you guys rebut. How is a division that has last year's Vezina winner, Hellebuck, a Vezina candidate and team MVP last year in Jacob Markstrom, a former Vezina winner and still top-tier goalie in Carey Price, a current Vezina candidate in Thatcher Demko, a bona fide number one starter in Freddie Anderson, and a former two-time cup winner in Matt Murray, and still the highest-scoring division in the league? How is that a bad division? It doesn't add up. The Canadian division is actually one of the strongest. Is this anything?
I'll start there. And no, I mean, so the way I look at it, it's great that the NHL's done this new division format out of necessity because, you know, the pandemic. But I find myself that I'm so out of tune, or I feel like I'm out of tune with the rest of the league now. And I'm so focused on the North Division because in Canada, we focus on our teams and we focus on you know, who the teams are playing, and it's just been so, you know, bubbled, as I'll you know, borrow a term from the pandemic here, right? It's been so bubbled that it's kind of felt like not the same league. So whether it's the best, the worst, a good or bad division, I don't even know what the frame of reference is. It's just so hard to understand that part for me.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right, Sad. It's one of those situations where we literally won't know. I mean, only four of these teams we're going to ever get an answer on. Are these teams as good as we say we are? We won't really know anything until that border goes away and these teams are starting to play games against each other. And then we'll have to do some sort of reverse extrapolation of, well, the Canucks lost, you know, this many games to Montreal, and Montreal made the playoffs but lost to this team. So I guess the Canucks sit here in the grand scheme of things. It's going to be interesting to see how people reverse engineer, but you know what, Teach, I'll say there's something to that. I mean, you know, you listed off some good stats that definitely speak to why that might be possible. I'm interested to see how the season progresses when these teams finally start playing some games against the American teams, but I don't know. But Joey, you have one, I think, that's not hockey related, and yours are Joey's usually our left field guy on the show. And and his "Is This Anything" takes are no exception. So let's see. Let's get this one out of the way because we may need time to process.
Well, this is I teased when we were in break to the guys here that this is going to be somewhat related to the intro that we have here. So we can all agree that Mark Messier is the true villain of Canucks hockey, correct?
Yes.
Like, obviously. Mm-hmm. So I think that the true villain of television was Jay Leno.
Oh.
I'll explain here. So Jay Leno, using different kinds of backstage politics, managed to outfox three of the most beloved late night hosts in the history of television. He did it to Johnny Carson by forcing him out of The Tonight Show early. He screwed David Letterman out of getting The Tonight Show. And then he gave The Tonight Show to Conan O'Brien and changed his mind and took it back. That is a villain. That is a villain. They should make a Disney movie about Jay Leno being a villain.
Yeah. You might be right, Joey. I never really thought of it that way. I mean, all those things definitely happened, but is Jay Leno one of the greatest TV villains of all time? I'll take it.
He's up there with Mr. McMahon.
That is the shines come off the apple of that guy for sure as well, too. I mean, joking aside, there's some other stuff as well, too. If you guys are John Oliver fans, just the way he aggressively went after Monica Lewinsky for a lot of years and some of those things as well, too. I think there's some smoke to that fire. You know, there's some smoke.
Here's Don on the text line. Is this anything? Does Satyar Shah hear himself talk at times? His Piers Morgan negativity that he inflicts about the Canucks on us daily, on a daily basis, is as bad as Walker attempting to cook a simple sausage at home and fail.
Wow!
God bless Earl from Mission for calling in. That's Don's submission for Is This Anything?
Let's just make a clean break here. Not that this needs to be said, but there is no inference to Sat Shaw being a racist in any form here. I know there's some comparisons of, we're just talking purely on the negativity side here. And I don't think anybody can get to Piers Morgan's level right now. That's some, you know, I don't think there's anything to
that. I don't
think
that's anything, Don.
No, I mean, it's funny because you asked Don, and obviously, you know, Sat Shaw, not Sat Me, is a negative person. But then you talk to others and they say he's too positive. So, like, what is it? I mean, I think that's a great balance, you know?
It's that he doesn't agree.
For the win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's it.
Looking up the Sat is the content I'm here for. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Here's another submission. Is this anything? Is JV what JV was supposed to be? Unsigned text, but
tell me
anything?
That's Nav sending that in, isn't it? He's sneaking one by us. That he went on, he went on this big JV rant the other day. But you know what? There's something to that for sure. You know, if I was JV 1.0 right now, I'd be a little scared of JV 2.0 coming in and being, you know, we've talked about McEwen and some of these guys coming in and showing Vertanen and kind of the right way to do some of these things. And what better guy than somebody else who's also a JV to come in and put a little pressure on the kid? I think it's perfect. I think there's something to that.
I think that it's like a JV, and you know, in my line of work, we call that a JV joint venture, right? So both these JVs can get together and do something useful, maybe.
Oh man, can you imagine if they did that in high school? They'd be on the junior varsity team. They'd be JV on JV doing JV. Okay, I got one here, guys. Is this anything? This is an unsigned text, and I actually really love this one because it's something I've talked about as well too. Guys, please sign your text, by the way. Is the draft lottery rigged? Are the balls weighted? And before we get into this, can I make a suggestion to just make all of this completely go away? They should have a contest every year that allows five random NHL fans to win an ability to go and be a part of the draft to feel if those balls are weighted. Because if you're telling me for a second that New York Rangers ball last year wasn't just a little bit heavier than the rest, huh? Well, I don't know. I'm thinking about it.
They had a little glitch. Yeah. They had a little glitch when they were doing it. He dropped the ball early, I think it was, but... there was something funny about that lottery.
The whole
draw.
Thing's just sketchy, right? Like, I don't know. I'm saying there's something to that. I've been on this for a long time. Like, let somebody else hold the balls, Gary. What's your problem?
Are you saying, I'm not going to answer that.
Hold the draft lottery foam balls. Boy, I'm on fire today.
Yeah. Okay, is this anything? Canucks fans will look to point at anything other than the actual facts to justify why their team is either good or bad. And what I mean by this is they will separate how the team actually performs on the ice and suggest that there's other outside influences that are affecting that at all times, no matter what.
So right? This is the Blinders flip side of the East Coast bias conversation that we've got a West Coast bias, that we've got a woe is me sort of thing.
Absolutely. Like it's the problems facing the Canucks are always someone else's fault.
Right? That is everything. That is like, not just anything. That is for sure that. We've got a bit of a woe is me mentality. Let's own it, guys. Absolutely we do. I think there's
we got a signed text again for once here on the Ooh. Is this anything? A lot of unsigned texts that we want to give credit for your crazy conspiracies, but here's one from Martinsky. Is this anything? The VC move shows that you need to take advantage of the COVID restrictions loophole. Pearson will be moved to Toronto before the end of the road trip or re-signed if they can't make this deal right now while on the East Coast. Once the Canucks are back, there will be no trades. Is this anything?
It might be something, but if he's hurt for 4 weeks anyway, like he's gonna need an extra week to get healthy at the deadline.
The Leafs schedule, I think, is pretty light. Like the Canucks coming up here, I think this is their best window make a trade, right? So 2 weeks quarantine, he's injured anyways, he misses 2 weeks. I don't think it's that much of a loss in terms of, they're going to be in the playoffs.
I'll extend that. Is this anything? So is this anything? The Canucks are being not very truthful with the length of injury for Tanner Pearson. They're saying 4 weeks. Right. Typically, these type of injuries, we assume it's like a sprained ankle, are 4 to 6 weeks. But we haven't heard the 4 to 6 weeks.
So you're saying they are just calling it four because they want to keep his name out there in the market.
Absolutely. And I think it's a smart thing to do. I mean,
it
could be. I thought I heard a rumor earlier, and I can't remember the source, but I thought I heard a rumor that the Jim Benning wasn't even entertaining or throwing his name out there. It was more they were focused on. Trying to work out an extension with him right now and then deciding on the trade later. So I don't know if that is something they're sad at.
So can I flip it on you guys and ask you the question this way then? Because to me, it just kind of popped into my head as we're talking about him being out for 4 weeks and the potential of trading within the Canadian market. Because teams already know kind of what he is, he's had injuries before, he's come back and been able to produce that kind of almost half a point a game clip that TJ referenced. Is there any situation where a team in the American marketplace knows they're going to have to bring somebody in and have that 2 week window anyways? Does Pearson look a little bit more viable for an American team because they know he's going to be off for that time anyways? So it's not like they have an asset sitting. They can bring him in. He can coalesce and heal for those last 2 weeks as he's doing his quarantine anyways, come back to the lineup healthy and be an asset to a team that's on a playoff drive. Could you see something like that happen?
I totally could. That's, and I would look at a team like Boston, right?
There you go.
Who have, there's a couple of players on the Boston team that are underperforming or, just maybe in the doghouse a bit. And Boston has that, like, the best line in hockey, right? Their top line. And then after that, I mean, they have it sprinkled out through the lineup. But a guy like Tanner Pearson could easily fit the Boston mold and play that middle six type of role on a team like Boston, I think. So that would make sense from their point of view. I just don't know what you know, the Canucks aren't getting much back for Pearson at the end of the day.
So here's another good chirp on the text line here. I love getting chirped, you know. I don't mind reading your text. If you want to chirp me, go ahead. Here's Bobby in Richmond. I know who this is, but he says, if Jim Benning fell and sprained his ankle, would Tej massage it for him? I got to go with a non-anglicized name. It's Tej. I like that. Randeep told me to do that.
Yeah, Tej.
So if Jim Benning fell and sprained his ankle, would Tej massage it for him? Bobby in Richmond.
So answer the question.
Are you kidding me?
TJ would never let him fall. That's the real answer.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
He'd be diving underneath him. Let me burn your fall for you, sir.
Here's another good one from Capitol Hill. Ron, is this anything? Hello, gentlemen. Just wanted to comment on the Horvat, Hoglander, Besser line. The hobo line is fun to watch.
It's bow spelled B-E-A-U, though, not like hobo.
Well, you know what he's trying to say. Yeah. The hobo line. I like that.
Yep.
That's something for me. I hope I see more of
that. I think it's a good name, but, you know, the way the Canucks roster is now, these lines are not going to last. Well, as simple as that.
The wingers together, like, that's the thing. I think we're going to see – I like Hoglander and Besser together. I think that's going to be a unit that's going to stay together. I like Jimmy Vesey and JT Miller after one game. I hope to see it again, but I like that kind of duo. I think they're going to stay together. So we might see some of these duos stay together and then centers kind of – rotate through or additional winger if it's Miller in the center there. And yeah. I do think Hoglander and Besser are playing really well together. I mean, if you watch them on the ice, whether it's Bo Horvat mm-hmm. or JT Miller down the middle, there's some chemistry there, the real chemistry there. Yeah. And I like to see that continue.
I love that. I love that, you know, instead of having a line, you have the duos and the pairs. Okay, you know, it works well on defense. Why can't that work on forward too? I understand there's mm-hmm. three players on the forward line. But I love that you can take two forwards and maybe have five pairs and sprinkle in the other winger or the center. So you need those kind of players that can play up and down the lineup and change position throughout the game. But having those, you know, the main two mainstays on each line, I think that helps teams a lot more, because as long as they have chemistry, the third person just has to kind of feed them, right? So I think that works really well. If the Canucks can get to a thing like that, you know, you mentioned Besser and Hoglander, maybe that's one. And Horvat and Pearson would have been one if Pearson wasn't hurt. But then you have guys like Jimmy Vesey that can play on any one of those lines and maybe not be a detriment to that line.
Yeah, you see the duos across the league. That's kind of the way things are done in general. Having three players that gel that well for a long time, you know, like you look at the 649 line and the success they've had, that's not super, super common here. Once again, you're with the Larshcast on Sportsnet 650 on the Canucks Game Day broadcast. We've got a bit of a layered one here from Sook, and I just want to kind of go through this one. Pardon me. There's a couple layers to this one, but conspiracy or not, he says, Travis Green's a Trevor Linden guy, and Pearson is a favorite of Green. If Benning does trade Pearson, is that not telling Green that he'll not be coming back? So basically, what he's implying is that Green's and Pearson's fates are tied together. If one goes, we can expect to not see Travis Green back next year.
I think it's far-fetched a bit.
Yeah. I think so, too.
Sorry,
I think
Sook.
So too.
Sorry, Sook. I don't think that's anything.
I appreciate that, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing to discuss, though.
It does throw a little new dynamic into it, but I don't think it's really relevant. I think Travis Green, his contract is not tied to anything else other than the results on the ice.
Yeah, if that were true, we've got way bigger problems organizationally, I would say, if that's the case.
If that's literally the case, that Travis Green would be that tied to one player on the roster, then you don't want Green as a coach. Because that means you'd be favoring that player, even if that player does not deserve to be in a position that they're in.
I like
Sook's second. Tanner Pearson's a middle six player. Like he's not gonna you know win you a series. He's gonna help win.
Well,
a game.
He won't lose you a series either. That's the dependability about Tanner Pearson. I like Sook's additional comment here for is this anything? I'm gonna reword it, Sook, to frame it a little bit better. But he's basically saying, is there a Besant Motors curse for the Canucks? Is this anything? He doesn't want any more new Canucks to get endorsed by them.
Well, look what happened to Roussel, man. He did it. He tried to score a couple car goals and the wheels fell off.
Okay, come on now. We can't
No, that's nothing either, no. Sook. But you know, those curses don't exist. It's all about a player's mentality. And you know, Adam Gaudette, he's
correct
he's
me heating, if I'm wrong.
He's heating
did,
up.
Did Petey not do a Besant Motors commercial there and go, like yeah. proceeded was, to go off Audi. After that?
It wasn't an hey, man, that was like but, it's but just, Audi or something.
Just regarding Adam Gaudette, he's heating up and he's looked good this year. I don't think he's cursed. I think he's turning a corner, and I think the goals are going to come in the second half. I mean, he's always had, like, for a while, the first half of the season, he was leading the league in expected goals, I believe, which, you know, it doesn't translate. You need to actually see that translate into actual goals, but that means he was generating a lot of chances, a lot of opportunities, and he's stuck with it, and now he's starting to see some results, and he's on a little bit of a streak here. I mean, you include that shootout winner too, right? So
well, he's one of the reasons the Canucks have won their past three games, right? He won the shootout for the Canucks against Ottawa, and then you know he scored a goal against the Habs as well. So he's definitely been a play driver the past three games, and the Canucks have won three, you know, the past three, and they've won 8 of the last 10. So definitely, he's been a big part of the Canucks' success of late.
That is definitely not anything. One more here for Is This Anything? Pekulzin will replace Tanner Pearson next year. Jimmy VC can fill in this year. Get what you can for Pearson while you can. So regarding the Pekulzin pun, is that anything? Is Pekulzin the replacement for Tanner Pearson?
Yeah, I think next year he could be. But the thing about Pekulzin, if I'm not wrong, plays the right side. So you'd have to shift around your forwards a bit, which is fine. He can probably play left wing as well. But that's not anything for this year. So,
no.
You know, the second part is... You know, get what you can for Pearson. And I'll go back to this. Canucks are not going to get anything for Pearson this year. If they do trade him, it's going to be for, at best, a fourth-round pick if they can have some sort of a bidding war, which likely isn't going to happen with him now, him being on the IR, right? So it's what can you get, a fifth-round pick? Maybe at that point, like, did the Canucks need a fifth-round pick? You know, Adam Gaudette? That could happen, but it's not common.
If it's like a sixth or seventh, I mean, Jim Benning doesn't have a great track record for sixth round picks anyway. So I think it's a useless pick. I think he can contribute more to this team down the stretch. What is a sixth going to get you?
But
you
what if we don't re-sign him and we get nothing for him? And we've talked about that a couple weeks ago a bunch of times too about Benning's inability to get any assets for players that we lose too.
I think this one's on Pearson though.
That's true.
He hasn't performed, right?
Yeah,
if he had 10 goals before he got hurt, he'd get something for him.
But hear me out. If it's a sixth round pick coming from a contender, that's really a seventh. You know that, right? It's later on in the round, right? So, anyways, that was Is This Anything? Thank you all for your submissions. We really enjoy this segment and interacting with you all. Before we go to break here and before Ian McIntyre joins the LarshCast for the first time.
Yes.
Very excited about that. I just want to do a little update on the Skies Blue chart here, okay? So, 2 weeks ago, the Habs were 5 points up with 5 games in hand. 1 week ago, they were 5 points up with only 4 games in hand. Today, they are 1 point up with 4 games in hand. The sky is blue. This is the LarshCast on Sportsnet 650, the home of the Vancouver Canucks.
It's time for Sportsnet Today. This is the LarshCast on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
There must be some kind of welcome back. You are again with the LarshCast on Sportsnet 650. It's 11:30. We're taking you right up until the 12 o'clock hour. We've got Ian McIntyre coming up in a few minutes here. This will be his first time joining the LarshCast ever, and we're incredibly excited to have him on to join the program to discuss... all things Canucks and today's absolutely massive game and his thoughts on Holtby starting in net as well too, and we'll break that down here shortly as well. But TJ, you may be able to do a quick update of the poll question before we do that.
Well, way to put me on the spot there. Gonna go to Twitter here, open up the little poll question and results, and what do we have here for the greatest trade acquisition in Canucks history? Leading the way with 51%. My favorite Canuck ever, Marcus Naslund for Stoyanov on the 25th anniversary of that trade. Alex Stoyanov, thank you for your time as a Canuck, but Marcus Naslund, what can you say? What an acquisition that was. What a career he had as a Vancouver Canuck. What memories he left, especially during that West Coast Express era. I mean, my favorite era in Canucks history. My favorite era of Canucks hockey ever. I don't know about you guys, but hands down.
Yeah. I'm still upset that nobody else is writing in my McLean answer because, you know, I made the case at the top of the show. I think the McLean choice is easy and it's not on the board there, but come on, write that one in, guys.
You know, I'm just still a little salty that we don't have Kessler for Bonino on there, you know, because...
Bonino for Sutter.
Yeah, right. Bonino. Yeah, well, obviously it's funny we break down the Luongo trade all the time. And to me, just we've talked about it before, but Luongo trade's my pick just because of the importance of the goaltending position and the trickle down effect of that. But yeah, you look at that Kessler trade, Kessler for Bonino, Bonino for Sutter. I mean, that's some legacy there as well, too, you know. But no, I think it's got to be Luongo. I don't know. Sad, we haven't heard your opinion too definitively on this. I don't think.
Oh, no, he went with Bertuzzi, but go ahead.
Yeah, so
he did. Well, okay, all right.
Bertuzzi, like that.
Oh,
that
right,
trade,
because it led to the trade. Right, right.
Of course. Well, it leads to so much. It's the whole history of Linden to Bertuzzi to Luongo, and you know we all know this, right?
Let's ask IMAC himself. He's here, Ian McIntyre on the LarshCast for the first time ever. How are you doing, Ian? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great. I wondered if any of you picked up, well, I'm sure you, well, probably all of you picked up last night, John Shorthouse's reference to Nils Höglander as a little pepper pot.
Yes.
Which was a direct Larshide descendant. So the original, Shorty tells me, it was Brandon Reed. I didn't remember that part, but I do remember Tom Larshide. With the little pepper pot. So there's another one on the Canucks. They had quite a bit of pepper last night, actually, throughout the lineup.
They did. Absolutely. And now that you mention it, I do see a little bit of that Brandon Reed and Nils Höglander. I mean, Höglander's obviously a lot more skilled and efficient, let's say. But, yeah, I can kind of get that. There's some similarities there. But, Ian, we have a poll question that we want to ask you about on the 25th anniversary of the Naslin for Stoyanov trade. And it's basically, what is the greatest trade acquisition in Canucks history? Our four choices here are Naslund, JT Miller, Todd Bertuzzi, and Roberto Luongo. Feel free to answer one of those or go off the board. What's your pick?
Well, whenever I think about Canucks trades, I always go back to Naslund for Stoyanov because there was a simplicity to it as well. It was so lopsided, right? What Naslin became when he left as the greatest scorer in franchise history, captained the team for a bunch of years. And Stoyanov, who, you know, unfortunately had a lot of injury problems that shortened his career, but he basically was out of hockey within 2 or 3 years of that trade, if I'm not mistaken. So I always go with that one. But the Bertuzzi Linden trade is also just incredibly fascinating because of the longevity of it. The trade chain was finally broken when Jacob Markstrom left to sign with Calgary, but there had been ramifications of that trade that benefited the Canucks until that time. So you're talking about, you know, 20 years. The trade continued to reap benefits for Vancouver. No one was very happy about it at the time, of course.
No.
But it was great that Brian Burke repatriated Linden. He was able to finish his career here. But that both of those trades, it'd be one of those two. But I'd go with the Naslin Stoyanov one.
Yeah, that one was just an absolute lopsided trade looking back now at the time. Ian, I just want to talk to you about another guy that we have on that list, actually, in the play of JT Miller so far. You know, I think to start the season, he's still playing at a point-of-game place, but was struggling defensively, was forcing the play a little bit. He started around into form a little bit more, I think most people would say. And last night, if I'm not mistaken, he played his 100th game, and his overtime winner was actually the 100th point that he had as a Canuck, 100th game with a Canuck, I should amend saying that. What's your sense, or what's the book on what JT Miller is as a Canuck, and are we going to see him return to the form of last year?
Well, he gets close in some of these games, and then he seems to have, you know, a step back where he's got the giveaways again and putting his team under duress with some of his decisions with the puck. He is a hugely influential, talented player. It almost seems As he goes, the team goes. And, you know, when he's on, he's not only probably the second best forward on this team, because I don't think anyone's better than Pettersson, but he's also one of the top power forwards in the whole National Hockey League. And I mean that literally. Like, there aren't many players left who possess the toolkit that JT Miller has and the ability to play at the very top of the lineup against anybody. And
absolutely,
you know, I have this ongoing argument with Sat Shaw about Miller, because Sat said on TV recently that he can live with the mistakes as long as Miller's engaged. Ooh. And I can't live with all the mistakes. I can live with
agreed.
Some.
Agreed. 100% agree.
Yeah, I can't live with going cross ice in his own zone unpressured with seconds left in overtime against Ottawa.
Exactly.
Needlessly.
Yeah.
With 6 seconds. Like, it just drives me nuts. I'm
it's
sure.
Absent-minded, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it infuriates Travis Green, but Green seems to know this player pretty well and you know, plays him a ton and continues to show confidence in him. And JT Miller, you know, that goal last night, it was so much about Miller. Like, the audaciousness to try to score that way and pull it off, and at the same time do it at the end of a shift where some people would have been screaming at their TVs, why is this guy still on the ice? Like, we're 2 minutes into overtime. He hasn't gone off the ice yet. They just gave up a breakaway. Get off the ice. But Miller, as he explained after, and it was a fair point. You know, Montreal had the puck a lot that first minute and 45 and really didn't do much with it until Anderson got behind them for a breakaway. And there was interference on that play that helped Anderson get free. But there's who else? JT Miller at the end of a two-minute shift, bullying his way past one defender, finessing his way past another, and then you know, scoring beautifully to win the game. What a goal.
All right, we're talking with IMAC here on the LarshCast and Sportsnet 650, previewing the Canucks and the Canadiens later on, 4 p.m. Pacific. And IMAC, I want to get your thoughts on Travis Green's decision to turn to Braden Holtby in the crease tonight. And you did allude to, you know, some of the mistakes that JT Miller's made, and one of the signifying moments of the season has been Braden Holtby's death stare to Miller, you know, a couple months back. So in terms of the decision to start Holtby today on the back-to-back, is that something you agree with, IMAC, or would you have gone back to Thatcher Demko?
Well, before I answer that, I had forgotten about the death stare, and thinking about it now, that was actually a turning point in the season. Like, we don't know where this season is going to go for the Canucks, and the odds are still heavily against them making the playoffs. But that death stare was kind of like the start of accountability for the team. Mm-hmm. And remember, Travis was so impressed by it, and with what Holtby said after that game about accountability, that he played Holtby the next night as well for that final game in Toronto. And I think that was really kind of a moment of reckoning. Now that I think about it, a moment of reckoning for the Canucks in how they were playing and what they needed to do to come together as a team and just be more responsible. And they've been a lot better since then. I said all week that I would just keep playing Thatcher Demko until he or Ian Clark decided that he just couldn't play anymore and needed a break, needed a reset. And the fact that the Canucks were pretty impressive last night and significantly limited what they gave up to the Canadiens. I know Montreal still had 32 shots, but you know, they did their damage on the power play. They got nothing at even strength. They struggled at even strength to generate high quality scoring chances. So I wasn't going to change my mind based on that game. I would have started Thatcher Demko. I think probably most people outside the hockey team would have stuck with Thatcher Demko. But, you know, Travis Green is making a conventional call and he's got a full team to worry about, not just his starting goalie. And so he's going to give Holtby a chance. I think Shorty and John Garrett on the broadcast last night talked about that Holtby, among active goalies who have played a certain number of games, has the best ever save percentage in the Bell Center. So he's had a lot of success there. And, you know, maybe that'll mean something. But it didn't surprise me. I said that I would start Demko, but I thought that Travis would go with Holtby, and that's the way it's going to turn out. And everybody's going to have something to talk about one way or another. We're all going to be talking about goaltending after tonight's game.
Regarding Holtby's career record in Montreal, Joey Kenward sent along his career road record of 10-2-1 at the Bell Center with a 2.03 goals against average and a .933 save percentage. So he definitely does have a fantastic record in Montreal, but we'll see what happens tonight. And I do want to ask you, Ian, how much of the decision regarding goaltending is influenced by Ian Clark?
Oh, hugely. Hugely. Like, I think to the point that Travis will essentially defer to Ian Clark when it comes to the goaltenders. And this would be something that they had planned. You know, they wouldn't have made the decision after last night. This is, you know, when they look ahead at the schedule, as much as they say they're only focusing on the next game with goalies, they're always looking a little bit ahead. And they're seeing where the back-to-back games are. They're seeing where the pressure points in the schedule, where it gets really hectic, you know, the four games and six nights stretches. And so they're aware of that. And I think they probably had this planned for a little while. In fact, we'll never know, but I suspect that Holtby was supposed to play before now, but they chose to give Demko an extra starter too, because of how well he was playing. And maybe that even goes without saying when a guy started as many in a row, but there would have been at least one or two games that they'd taken away from Holtby. So they're going to give him this one. And it is a conventional decision, but in a way it's the harder decision. The conventional decision is the riskier decision. I think it would have been easier for Travis Green just to ride his white-hot goalie, the guy who's been the best goalie in the NHL this month. And if it doesn't work out, you know, who's going to say, well, what'd you play that guy for? Like, you play him because he has been the best goalie this month. If it doesn't work out, you say, well, we're going with the guy who has won us eight of his last nine starts, and you know, sometimes he has to lose. But Travis opens himself to more second-guessing with this decision, even though, as I say, it is a conventional one. It is the decision I think the great majority of NHL coaches would have made.
Yeah, it's such an interesting conversation, and the deployment of that is going to be really, really interesting. And like you say, no matter what, there's going to be an interesting story to talk about, whether it's a positive one in the Canucks' favor or not. But it sure is a big game from Holtby tonight. And I just want to talk about, you know, with the situation with everybody in our marketplace was upset over the reffing last game and some of the missed penalty calls. With the history of this team in the season series so far and the importance of this game, and how big it is for the Canucks to come out and win this one. What are you hoping to see from the Canucks in terms of a start? Is it getting an early goal off the hop, or is it just an energy level, or is it a cohesiveness? What to you is your key factor, I guess, in the Canucks winning this game this afternoon?
Well, I'd like to see all of the above.
Fair enough.
I think having energy at the start and trying to play a couple of shifts in the offensive zone. We've seen so many games this year, including the bad one last week, and now I'm trying to think who that was against. Montreal, when they were in. But anyways, there was a game recently, the Canucks, in the first 6 minutes, they literally didn't possess the puck across the blue line. Mm-hmm. And when you have a start like that, it's really hard to pull yourself out of a hole when yeah. all that traffic is one way, your legs aren't moving, you're not moving the puck. It was the game that Travis said he didn't think they were sharp with the puck and should have made passes that normally they'd make and they couldn't connect. I'd like to see tonight that they come out and actually connect on some passes early, just look sharp and get the play down to the Montreal zone. You know, one of the aspects about last night's game that was so impressive is that there really wasn't any of those lulls within the game that we've become accustomed to with the Canucks.
Mm-hmm. Especially in the second period, too.
Yeah, and we saw it recur in Ottawa, and not just because they blew two goal leads in those games, but there were parts of those games, and especially the first game, most of that game, they just weren't very good. And I think one of their failures this year, it has been in many of these losses, their inability to get through difficult stretches of the yeah. game. In other words, you know, one bad shift leads to two, leads to three, and suddenly all the momentum is one way, all the energy is with one team. You're just hanging on, and it's hard just to turn 180 degrees from that. And so I liked last night that the Canucks didn't have any of those lulls. And I think that's going to be a key for them going forward now. You know, Montreal's probably going to play better tonight. And they've got talented forwards, which means there's probably going to be some shifts of sustained pressure in the Canucks zone. I'd like to see the Canucks handle those periods within games a little better. I'd like to see them play, as Travis is always saying, play direct, play quickly. So often in those spells is when we notice JT Miller or Brock Besser or numerous others, because they, at a time when the team's under pressure, they're still taking risks with the puck, which further fuels the pressure that the team is under. I'd like to see them just soldier through those bad spells of games better than they have so far. And I suspect they'll have to do that tonight at some point, because I do think the Canadians are going to be a much stiffer opponent than they were last night.
Absolutely. And as it's said on the hockey board at practice, move feet, move puck.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
So we're up against the clock here, Ian, but I just wanted to say, and you know, it's from my own experience and having talked to a lot of fans and those in you know, my own circle, and you know, you are frequently regarded as one of the best in the business here in Vancouver. And I don't mean to be obsequious so much as I mean to be complimentary, but really, you know, it's the first time you're on the
Googled Larshcast. You Googled obsequious, didn't you?
No, I actually use that when I write here and there. But I just want to ask you, Ian, like, what is your recipe for success in covering the Canucks, if you can indulge?
Oh, well, first of all, thank you for the kind words. I'm not accustomed to that. Of course, I'm on the air a lot with Andrew Walker, so never going to get that. I don't really have a recipe. I've always tried to cover the team critically but fairly. And a former colleague of mine, now retired, Elliot Papp, used to say the coverage reflects the team's play. And ideally, that's how it should be. So when the team wins, you should be positive without, you know, being gushing. And when the team loses, you should be critical, but be constructive in it. And the other thing, as a journalist, I've always tried to make myself accountable. And so I'm responsible for what I write. And it's not that I'm responsible to fans for what I write. I'm responsible to my employers, to myself, but also to the players. I go into the dressing room until the pandemic hit. I go into the dressing room almost every day of my adult working life in newspapers. And if somebody is unhappy with something I've written, then we talk about it. And, you know, I find in our business, and especially the way it's evolved in the last 10 or 15 years, there are so many people who cover the game who seem incredibly sensitive to any criticism about their work, and then that seems to make them hostile or leads to, you know, Twitter feuds and silly things like that. You know, in our position, if we're going to dish it out, we have to be able to take it. And yeah, I think it helps if you're willing to, you know, face the players and be responsible for what you write, good and bad, or I should say positively or critically. And I've always tried to do that. It seems to have helped a little.
That's very well said. And here's a little side note for you. I coached Elliot Papp's son in hockey, Graham. So you can reach out to Elliot and mention that if you'd like. But thank you very much, Ian, for joining us here on the LarshCast. We'd love to have you at some point, maybe in the off season, on our podcast, where we can go a little longer and more unfiltered, and sit down and, you know, talk about your career a bit more and whatnot. But thank you for joining us here on the LarshCast. It was very special, and
been a pleasure.
Enjoy the game tonight.
It was awesome.
Well, thanks. It's nice being on with you guys. And Tommy is one of my favorite people, and if you've got Tommy in the name of your cast, I know it's got to be good. So have a good day. And
we have his blessings, yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to come on again.
Oh, we'd love to have you.
Take care, Ian McIntyre. Yes, that was iMac, and we are the LarshCast. Thank you all for listening. I'll give a final update of the poll question that we had, the greatest trade acquisition in Canucks history. And, you know, it's Naslin's running away with it, but the percentage right now was 51% before. It is 51% still. So, coming up next.
Here it
I
is.
I love this line. Coming up next, on air with Israel Fair and Alex Blair. Take care.